Good evening, everyone. Let's call this meeting to order, the Champaign County Board. Committee of the Whole for Finance, Policy, and Justice, and tonight, special guests including Eloch. Tuesday, March 8th, 2011, the time is 6:03. Roll call, please.
Alex.
Here.
Ammons.
Here.
Anderson.
Here.
Denzel.
Here.
Kirkson. Here. Betts.
Here.
Carter.
Here.
Coert. Holderfield.
Here.
James.
Here.
Jay. Jones. Kurtz.
Here.
Langenheim.
Here.
McGinty.
Here.
Michael.
Here.
Mosier. Nudo.
Here.
O'Connor.
Here.
Petrie.
Here.
Quisenberry.
Here.
Richards.
Present.
Rosales.
Here.
Sapp.
Here.
Schrader.
Here.
Weibel.
Here. We have a quorum. Mr. Jay is sick. Mr. Mosier is out of town. Seek approval of the minutes for the February 15, 2011. Please note that this lilac colored item has a correction. I believe it's lines 703 to 706. Is that correct? Yes. That's out of the one that's in the agenda. Was that moved by Mr. Rosales? Who moved that? I hear Mr. Rosales moves it a second. Second by Ms. Anderson. Discussion. Ms. Petrie.
A point of information. During this meeting, I asked for some data from the nursing home consultant.
Ms. Petrie, we're asking, this is a discussion on whether the minutes are accurate or not.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Further discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Seek approval of the agenda just the agenda.
So move.
Move by Mr. Rosales. Second by Mr. James. Discussion. Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Public participation. Mr. Mark Thompson.
Good evening. Well, pleasant surprise when I got here tonight, and I found out that you guys have become a little bit less restrictive on what you were proposing on the 1 per 40, and I congratulate you on that. The idea that initially we were talking 1 per 40 maximum, I think it was 2 per parcel, was an egregious attack on property rights. Now, personally, I am a property rights person, and I really don't think you should pass what you're passing. I think there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of landowners in a rural area that have no clue what you're doing here in the name of zoning, and they're not going to be apprised of the situation. You're just going to vote it in, and over time they're going to find out that what used to be called their property rights don't exist. They're going to find out how they've been stripped down to the bare minimums. Now, we know all politics is local, and we also know the concept of top-down, bottom-up. Now, at the top right now, we've nationalized part of the auto industry, healthcare. They've taken control of the financial regulations, and the list goes on and on and on. But locally here and across this nation, in county boards just like this, they've been passing similar, highly restrictive legislation or regulations in the name of farmland preservation. Now, I'm into personal responsibility as well, and I think you'll find out most of the men and women who live in the rural communities are very responsible people. And I think you'd find out that they do care about the farmland and future generations. And I think it ought to be their choice to make the decisions on their farmland and not you folks here. I think this concept of the collective has a place, but when it is so extreme. I guess the word is takings. When you pass this, it's called takings, because where someone might have made some money on their personal property, which a lot of property is all about making money so you can continue through life, the term is called takings. I believe other communities reciprocate financially to these landowners through various financial forms. I believe it's called, what am I thinking of, John? PDR. Yeah. Anyway, it's development rights money, and it's designed so that these people don't get taken to the bank. Now, last week, I gave you a notice. Did that notice get recorded? It did? Okay, great. I hope you guys looked at that seriously, because it pertains to each of you. You guys have a limit to what you're allowed to do, and there's this thing called fairness. Do you think it's fair that you people go out and tell somebody that their property value just dropped immensely? Well, a lot of people would argue it's givens, and they wouldn't have any value if it wasn't for the government. I'm sure some of you know the argument, but I'll tell you what, those farmers out there don't know the argument. They're just going to get hit upside the head when you pass this. So I hope you listen to me and take me seriously. And again, if you're a Republican here and you understand the premise of being a Republican, there's no way you should vote for this. Even if the Farm Bureau wants it, again, the Farm Bureau is made up of farmers, not landowners. This is a landowner issue. It's not about the Farm Bureau. It's about landowners. Keep that in the back of your mind. And seriously, if you're a Republican, there's no way you should pass this. And if you're a good Democrat, you wouldn't either. But if you're a progressive Democrat, it's got your name all over it. Thank you.
Is there any other members of the public who wish to speak at this time? We'll close public participation. Communications from the county board members. Any communications? Seeing none, let's move on to Justice and Social Services. Mr. Richards.
Continuing with our series of departmental presentations tonight, we're going to have presentations from Court Services and the Public Defender's Office tonight. We'll go ahead and get started with Court Services.
Each month I provide statistics to the board concerning the activity of both the juvenile and the adult divisions of the department. Tonight what I've attempted to do is give you a comparison of a three-month time frame from November, December of 2010 and January of 2011 compared to November, December of 2009 and January of 2010, just to give you some ideas of the activity during those two specific time frames. I'm not going to go through all these in detail, but I would like to point out a few things associated with this. You can see that we have a pretty active juvenile court. You can see the number of petitions filed in the first graph. Quite a bit of an increase from the previous time frames. Typically, on the next graph, when we're talking about males, females, we are seeing more females involved in the juvenile justice system than we have over the years. So that's something that we've kind of... and that also goes to programming, too, that you have to adjust your programming to address those issues, any changes that occur. Typically, the 14, 15-year-olds are the largest age group when we talk about those individuals involved in the juvenile court. There's a lot of activities, a lot of programs that attempt to keep juveniles out of the juvenile justice system, so it would not be uncommon for the older kids, the 14, 15-year-olds, to be involved in the system. In other words, the diversion cases would be typically the younger kids. Moving on to page 2, we're talking about restitution. There would be an expectation that if a juvenile is involved in an offense, whether it be a retail theft or whatever, that an order be entered by the court for the minor to pay the restitution. Sometimes the restitution is pretty high. As you can see, we had a fair amount of money ordered just on three cases during this time frame. On the next graph, refers to the Department of Corrections commitments. You can see we had 13 so far in this quarter. We also wanted to point out some information here on the evaluations. An evaluation is an order by the court. It's an actual commitment to the Department of Corrections for a period of time, usually 60 to 90 days. Then the minor is returned to court. His progress during that 60 or 90 days is reviewed, and then the court can either reaffirm that commitment or vacate the commitment. Typically, it is vacated, and the minor is then placed on probation. As for the, moving on to page three, as for the numbers associated with probation and court supervision, they're fairly consistent. We will have some peaks and valleys, but over a period of a 12-month period of time, we'll typically have about 150 juveniles under court order at any one time. We have a very active juvenile court. Therefore, we have a lot of cases that are being processed and a lot of reports being filed with the court. And you can see on the next graph to the bottom of page three the number of not only the social history investigations, but also the number of remission or review reports. And this is important because the court, historically speaking, Champaign County has always had a very active juvenile court and very active in that the court likes to watch the minors very closely. And on these situations, when we're talking about review hearings, it would not be uncommon for a minor to have to come back to court, say, every month or every 6 weeks, and the court will review his or her progress during that term of time. In other words, how well that individual is complying with the orders of the court. Now, as to the adult division on page four, once again, the statistics from the various time frames that we talked about, you will see pretty active number of intakes for the so far for this particular quarter. On to the next graph, the male females. Once again, you can see that we are experiencing a fair number of females also involved in the criminal justice system. As for the age of the adult offenders, typically the age group 21 to 30 is usually the largest group that's involved in the criminal cases. On to page five, once again, getting back to restitution, you can see also on the criminal side there would be an expectation that if restitution, if a victim is due restitution, that would be ordered. And once again, you can see there's a fair amount of restitution that is ordered. As far as the breakdown on the cases, and this is the way it really should be, you can see there's a fair number of the overall caseload dealing with felony cases, and as I said, in reality, that's what it should be. It should be the more serious offenders that we're dealing with and not the misdemeanor offenders. On to the last page, once again, just referring to the investigations, you can see that pretty active court both last year at this time and also at the present time. And the last graph has to do with the number of commitments to the Department of Corrections on the criminal side, the adult side. This would be for individuals that are under court order. They fail to comply with the court orders. They either return to court on a revocation of the probation or they get another case and they're committed to the Department of Corrections. Any questions? Yes, Tom.
Do you keep any statistics in relationship to the graphs that you have here that involve racial breakdowns, black, white, Native American, Hispanic?
We do, and that is one of the categories in the overall scheme of statistics that we supply. Typically, on the criminal side, it's usually about, I'm going to guess here, I'd say it's probably about 50-50. On the juvenile side, it's much higher. Typically, African-Americans, probably about 60 to 65%.
And in relationship to those that are committed to DOC, is there a breakdown?
We do have a breakdown. We do that in our typically at the end of the year. I would say that would be fairly consistent with the 65-35, perhaps maybe even higher.
Is that for juvenile or is that for adults?
I can only speak for juveniles. I'm not sure what it is for adults. Typically it is, and that is one of the issues that's being addressed not only in this state but throughout the country, the disproportionate number of minorities, not only in the system, but the disproportionate number of minorities that appear to be or that are committed to the Department of Corrections. Yes.
Are those stats available online or on the website?
They are not. Well, the stats that we supply.
Right. You mentioned racial categories were given to us on a monthly basis?
Wait,
or?
Your monthly stats will have that all in it. You wouldn't have an entire year, but every month you should be able to see that, both on the juvenile side and on the adult side.
For those that might be interested in seeing those stats, they would be available on where?
They would be on the webpage.
Okay.
The monthly stats.
That's what I was asking.
Okay.
The annual report is also on file in the county board office if you ever want to see the court services annual report.
Yes.
Joe, in terms of juvenile issues, what's the break? And I don't know, you might not know this, in terms of station adjustment. The numbers in station adjustment that succeed and the numbers that go into YDC.
That's an excellent question. We have, in Champaign County, we have a very active system associated with the formal station adjustments. These are cases where they're diverted or they're not passed on to the state's attorney's office for processing. We've been doing a lot of work with the local departments on that whole issue. I don't know what those numbers are, although I do believe one of the new programs that we've implemented in the last year, PLL, does have some statistics, and we continue to work on those statistics. In those cases, in those particular cases, the numbers are really good. The outlook is very good. But it's still early. As to the formal station adjustment not getting into the system, we are in the process of tracking that, but I couldn't tell you how successful one program is over the other.
Can I have a follow-up? I actually very support the station adjustment. I also, when you do develop the report, I would like to see a breakdown on racial in terms of those who were brought into that system for station adjustment and the number of African Americans versus Caucasians that go on into YDC.
Okay.
There's been some rumors, and I would like to see the statistics that say that the rumors are wrong, quite frankly, but I don't know.
Keep in mind that the formal station adjustments, those would be cases that would be handled by the police departments. They wouldn't necessarily come to us, so our department wouldn't track those. So individual police departments would track the formal station adjustments.
Yeah. One more thought. Can you simply ask them? They're not going to tell me. You are the funnel that it's been filtered into.
My guess would be that they would also have a yearly report or a yearly plan, much like we do, that would outline those numbers. I don't know what they are for, say, Champaign or Urbana. I certainly would look into it and I can report back next month if you'd like.
This is the first time I've ever seen a report like this, so my question may be right on track or not. But when you mentioned 150 juveniles on probation, and that is sort of the way it goes month by month, mm-hmm. is there any breakdown of the effectiveness? Are these repeat people? How do we know what's working and what isn't working?
We do not track juveniles, say, over a period of 3 years. In our annual plan that we talked about, there should be some information. I believe there's information as to the number of individuals that were brought into new cases and cases that we had previously. Now, we are looking into the whole system on recidivism to include the formal station adjustments that Tom mentioned and also the individuals under court supervision or on probation, but we do not have those compiled as of yet. It would not be unusual for a juvenile, 14, 15-year-old juvenile, to serve a period of probation and maybe 6 months later, maybe to be back involved in the system and maybe get another sentence of probation.
I have a problem. Based on the way you answered me, are you implying that this is something that you are planning to put into the statistics so we start getting a better sense of what's happening?
If I would do that, it would probably be over a period of a year, 2 years. I wouldn't do it on a monthly basis. It would be part of a yearly thing.
Right. Thank you.
I'd certainly do that.
Any other questions? Mr. Betts.
How many, those, and maybe this isn't what happened, it's happening, but the public school system seem also to be a with the police and the teachers reporting incidents. How is that system working in terms of the public schools as a funnel into your system?
Well, we would be toward the tail end of the system. Typically, what would happen on a situation, say, at one of the local high schools, the school resource officer would go ahead and compile a report. Typically, the police departments, contingent upon the offense, of course, but if it was a misdemeanor offense, they would almost always do a formal station adjustment or be a warned and released, admonish the juvenile, and that would be the extent of the disposition. The formal station adjustment could then be referred to an agency for the monitoring for a period of 3 to 4 months. And during that period of time, they might expect the minor to do certain things. In other words, stay out of trouble at school and comply with household rules and regulations. That agency would then report back to the police department as to how well the individual did, and then that would end that formal station adjustment. It is certainly possible that a minor could get more than one formal station adjustment. As a matter of fact, it would not be uncommon for a minor to finish a formal station adjustment and then maybe have another formal station adjustment maybe 6 or 9 months later. The intent here is for these minor offenders, to keep them out of the system. And only those individuals that are involved in more serious offenses would then likely gravitate to the formal court system, the juvenile justice system.
In terms of minor offenses, and this is the thing that's always bothered me, is how we classify minor offenses. You help me on that issue, because the stories that we hear, and they may or may not be true, is that the minor offense for one group is treated as a station adjustment, the minor offense for another group is treated as going to youth detention center. And that's the kind of information that is spread in the community, and I think that the programs need to address that perception.
Well, I didn't know that was a perception, so I'm glad you brought it to my attention. I will say this. You have to understand a misdemeanor offender is not brought to the detention center unless it's a domestic battery case. Now, a domestic battery case, they may be brought to the center, and we work with local agency to get them, they're not detained, but we work with them to get them in a respite situation until that whole domestic situation can be resolved. Misdemeanor offenders are not typically detained at the detention center. We have a scoring instrument that we use at the detention facility. As a matter of fact, it was developed in this county and used pretty much statewide. And we worked with the local police departments, the state's attorney's office, the judiciary. And with that instrument, when a minor comes in, there are certain things that are reviewed and scored. And if they don't score up to that level, they're not detained. And it could even be a felony. For instance, you could have an aggravated battery, as you well know, is a felony. But it could be a pushing incident as opposed to striking someone, hitting them in the jaw, and doing great bodily harm. That would be different. But a pushing incident that happens on school property is a felony. They typically would not be detained. So I'm glad you brought that up. I didn't know that, but the misdemeanor offenders, I'm not saying that a misdemeanor offender couldn't be detained, but I'm just saying, generally speaking, a misdemeanor offender would not gravitate, the numbers would not gravitate to where we would be detained.
Any other questions? Follow-ups? No? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Public defender.
See how low this can go. Oh. Good evening. My name is Randy Rosenbaum, and I'm the Champaign County Public Defender. There are two things I'd like to do tonight. One is to just give you an overview of my office. Some of you are new to the county board. Those of you who have been on the board for a while may not have been on justice. And to give you an idea and an overview of what it is that we do on a regular basis. And the second thing I want to do is to talk about challenges that we have, particularly in light of the budget crisis that's been going on, not only here in this county, but around the state and the country. First of all, to start with the overview of what it is that we do, the public defender's office is not a luxury. The public defender's office is required under the Constitution. And every state is allowed to set up its own system. And in Illinois, there's a statute that sets up the system. In Illinois, most counties set up their own public defender office. The public defender is appointed by the judiciary, and they work at the judiciary's pleasure. I was appointed by the local judiciary back in 1998, and I guess I'm in my 13th year now as chief public defender. We have assistants who work for us, and I assign those assistants jobs within the office. The judiciary tells me how many positions I can have and support staff as well, but certainly the statute requires the county board to be the funding mechanism for any of those things. So there's sort of this dual relationship that I have with the judiciary as well as the county board. Public defenders get appointed basically for people who cannot afford their own lawyers in criminal cases. The statute also permits us to be appointed in other types of cases such as abuse and neglect cases, civil mentally ill commitment cases, and the like. The attorneys in my office generally start in traffic court as their new attorneys and elevate up to misdemeanors and eventually felonies. They have their general caseload that they handle. There are also office responsibilities everybody has, such as doing arraignment court, which is every day of the week when people are first told what the charges are, and bond court, which is similar to that on the weekends. The life of a case, and I'm not going to belabor this point because I don't think you really need to know all of this or want to know all this, but when we get cases out of arraignment court, we assign them to lawyers. In every courtroom, whether it's a felony, misdemeanor, or traffic courtroom, have a series of pretrial conferences every month. Those are status dates. The judge wants to know what's going on with the case. Many times the cases are set for trial. Many times the cases are set for plea. If we still need to work on them, the case might be continued to the subsequent pretrial date. It's during this pretrial process that normally goes on for at least several months. We are reviewing the police reports. We are talking to witnesses and doing investigations. We're doing legal research, filing motions, and perhaps most importantly, we're negotiating with the state. Most of our cases are resolved by plea bargains. The vast majority are. The ones that cannot be resolved by plea bargains go to trial. And my staff, as Joe said earlier with his statistics, active. My attorneys are very active in court. Most of my attorneys are in court every single day, sometimes at these pretrials handling 150 cases in one day. And we try a lot of cases. One of my misdemeanor attorneys tried 3 misdemeanor cases in 1 week. I've had a number of felony attorneys who have tried 2 or 3 felony cases in a month. So we don't sit on our laurels. We really work very hard. And we represent people at the trial level only, from the first time they're assigned to us all the way through pleas and trials and sentencings and the like. On the handout, you see an outline of some of the resources that our office has. We have 14 attorneys in our office on the books. 13 were fully funded. One is partially funded for this year, and I'm hoping to fill that soon. We have essentially 3 support staff, an office manager and 2 secretaries. Those are the resources we have. We do not have an investigator or social worker or paralegal. Some other counties, such as McLean County, I gave you that handout, have some of those resources. We don't. We rely heavily on the attorneys to do research and to do investigations themselves. We have a small line item for investigations, but that really, really, really only supports perhaps 5 or 6 major investigations during the year. We also rely heavily on interns. We have people from the University of Illinois College of Law every semester, as well as a number of undergraduate interns as well. that's essentially what we do in a nutshell. Let me just very briefly go through some of the challenges that we face. Every public defender's office has challenges. It's a tough kind of work. It's not for every attorney. You have to have thick skin. I mean, you're dealing with people who have mental illness problems, drug abuse problems. You're dealing with police officers, experts, judges, prosecutors. There's timelines. You're going to the jail. It's a very difficult job. But it's the kind of work that my attorneys like to do. Everybody in our office believes in what we do, believes that we should zealously represent these people as best we can and with the limited resources that we have. And I think we do a heck of a job. A few years ago, just anecdotally, you know, a few years ago, we had very few attorneys leaving. And most of the time when an attorney would leave, maybe once every year or two, we would lose an attorney. And it was because their spouse was at the U of I and they graduated and moved on. And in the last couple of years, really, it's become quite burdensome. And we've had a very high turnover. In the last several years, we've had two to three attorneys leave every year. And some of them have left even without having jobs lined up because it's stressful. It's very hard to do all the work that needs to be done. Many people really have this idealistic view of how they do the job, and if the kind of work they do doesn't reach to their own personal ideal, they feel that they better not do it at all. So we've had a fair number of turnover in the last couple of years, and the morale's been kind of low, although I think everybody still enjoys working there. Because of the hiring freezes, when we do lose an attorney, we're down for several months. So that's had a burden on us, and because we're very personnel heavy, we don't have a lot of commodities and services that when we've had the budget cuts, and I understand they are necessary. They've taken an enormous toll on us because it's basically been personnel. There have been some realistic outcomes to that. More cases have had to be continued than we would like. We've had more complaints that I have to deal with from clients about their lawyers, which I have to deal with. We wanted to start scanning some old documents about a year ago, and because we've lost a secretary spot, we haven't been able to start the scanning, something we'd like to do. So I wanted to just put a real face on our office, because I know that when you read about us, you hear about us, oh, your statistics, you're processing people, and I suppose in a way we are, but we're doing the best job we can, and we do a darn good job with the resources that we have, and the people like being in our office, and we do a good job, but there have been strains, and we're hoping the budget looks better in the coming years. I just want to end by just saying that, you know, it's hard to compare our office to other offices because of charging instruments and the way prosecutors charge cases and the dynamics and demographics in a county. We're no different than any other county. I mean, there's a lot of crime everywhere. Public defenders have high caseloads. They work for lower than market salaries. They don't have a lot of resources. But I think and I hope in the future that this board will help our office as best it can in providing other resources to help us get us up to where I think we need to be. We do a very, very good job with the resources we have. But I think that as the county's done in the past, you've cut a lot of fat out of the budget. But our office, I think, had the fat cut out a few years ago. And now when budget cuts come, you're cutting into the bone for us. But we continue to do a good job. I expect and I demand good work from my attorneys. We get good work from our attorneys, and I hope to continue that work. So anyhow, I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have about our office and how we function.
Ms. Petrie.
I did my due diligence, and I went to the website to read the November report, and I just want to let you know that it...
Corrupted data. I was told before the meeting. Yes, every month we submit the statistics.
Okay.
It's a form that says how many cases each attorney opens and closes, and it's classified by felony, misdemeanor, and so on. We submit that to the county board, and it goes up on the web, and yeah, I'm sorry, but for some reason that was corrupted. I'll tell my secretary to resend it tomorrow.
That was just to let you know.
Okay.
And I'm curious why it's only November 2010 when we're in March of 2011.
Well, we had a deadline of a week or two ago to submit the December ones, and we got those in today. I have three support staff. My office manager is the one who puts the statistics together, and we've had a couple of support staff off for medical problems. And so we're usually a month or two behind anyway, because when the lawyers are closing out their files for January, we give them a week or so because sometimes they have them in their files, the office isn't closing them out, but you should have the new November tomorrow, and we've already submitted the December one.
Thank you. And then one last observational. Mm-hmm. Actually, two observational comments. I don't know. I mean, it's not county board business, but I am a little amazed at the steady increase of the case trends for the juvenile delinquents. It's upward and outward quite
well,
quite a bit.
Yeah, I have no control over the number of filings.
No, I'm not saying you do, but it tells us something, doesn't it?
I think it may tell us something as a community and a society, and I know that Joe was mentioning the numbers of juvenile cases have gone up in the years, and I don't know the reason for that in particular, but it has affected our office. We used to have one attorney doing all the juvenile delinquency, and now we spread it out among three, essentially.
Okay, and then my last observational comment is, I mean, I don't know the crime environment in McLean County, but we seem to be outstripping them in almost every category here in your comparison columns.
Well, I mean, the number of misdemeanors are roughly comparable. We do have more juvenile delinquency cases, and we have far more felonies. And it could be because we have more crime here. It could be the charging decisions of the state's attorney. I don't know. But we do have a lot more felonies in McLean County. That's true.
Ms. Ammons.
I wanted to ask you, I don't quite understand this, and maybe this would benefit me. I'll give you two questions. One comment and one question, just to be fair. But I have sat with you, as well as watched the work that comes out of the Public Defender's Office, and saw the just overstretched experience of the attorneys in that office. I don't quite understand why the Public Defender's Office, which is funded by the county, and why the State's Attorney's Office, which also gets its funds through county and other resources, why aren't they equitable? I don't understand that.
Well, the State's Attorney's Office has more attorneys for two reasons. One, they handle civil cases as well, representing the county board and so on, so they have a number of attorneys who represent them for you guys. Plus, they're handling not only the cases that the Public Defender's Office has, but, you know, the private attorneys have as well. So I would never expect to have, you know, if they have 22 attorneys, I would ever expect to have 22. So that accounts for most of the difference in numbers.
The last comment would be that, of course, we know you guys do a good job. You do the best job you can with 13 people and 400 cases, you know, spread out among you and more. I would recommend you to any of us here at the county board, if you need an attorney, to pull one of you, if we could, so that they could have the experience of sitting in the hall. Stuck with 13 attorneys for 400 plus cases, and I think the county board has a responsibility to make sure that we can not only provide for those attorneys so that they don't leave, which is what we want in the county, to retain our good staff, right? Attorneys leave because they're overwhelmed, or they go off to other jobs, or they get better pay. So this is a reality in the field, but we also have to put some proposal to keep those attorneys that we have and increase it and make it worth their while, so to speak, to stay here at Champaign County. Otherwise, I don't think you've had a stable month in the last 2 years in the Public Defender's Office.
Yeah. Well, the only comment I would make about that is that I get very few complaints about my attorneys for doing a bad job. Most of the complaints I do get, if I get any, are I've been trying to reach this attorney and they don't seem to have any time on their calendar to meet with me. And sometimes that's because they're in court all the time and they may only have a few slivers of time to meet with clients, and it might not always coordinate with the clients. So having a lot of cases means you're in court a lot, and that sometimes is troubling in terms of setting up appointments.
That's true.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Yeah, can you explain to me the difference between the statistics on the first page for 2009 and 2010 and those listed on the second page?
Yeah, the statistics on the first page are the actual cases that my office was appointed on in a given year. And it may actually exceed the total number for a year that were filed by the circuit clerk. Because the way we keep statistics are, if someone's arrested today, it's going to come up as a March 2011 statistic. If someone was put on probation in 2010 and the state's filed a petition to revoke that probation now, it will actually pop up on the system as a new case we've gotten. So on this first page, those are the actual number of cases for which the court has appointed the public defender to us on a felony case or a misdemeanor or juvenile delinquency case. Mm-hmm. The statistics on the second page are the actual total number of cases that were filed by the state's attorney with the circuit clerk. So those include private cases, public defender cases, and only those new cases that were filed in a particular year.
Okay, then I would expect the numbers on the second page to be higher, because more would be filed than...
No, if last year they filed 100 cases and this year they file 100 cases, you may actually have more public defender appointments this year, because on top of the 100 new cases, you have petitions to revoke from cases that had started in the prior year. Okay. So... it's confusing. I apologize.
Ms. Michaels. Mr. Betts.
I'm speculating a little bit, but in relationship to McLean County and Champaign County in terms of the appointment of counsel, on misdemeanors in particular, one of the things McLean County State's Attorney's Office did in the past, or they're still doing it, is they would write an arraignment, waive jail time for the defendant, and thus there would not be an appointment of the public defender's office in that county. And I think that policy may account, at least on misdemeanors, for some of the differences. Now, in felonies, I can't imagine a state's attorney's office actually waiving the jail right, but I do know that counties do that. I know that Champaign County has never done that, as far as I know. Has that ever been talked about?
You know, I think it may have been discussed briefly at some point years ago, but I don't think it went very far. And it may very well have been sort of the fairness of it. I mean, if you're charged with a misdemeanor, but they take off jail time, which is a good thing for the individual, but now they don't get a lawyer, you know. And so I think perhaps it was like, you know, maybe we should have a lawyer. So but I don't know whatever became of that. I know there are a lot of strategies that other counties have used to decrease caseloads. For example, some counties will... allow you to plead guilty earlier on in the proceedings to avoid multiple court dates and things like that. And our county has done a really good job. Our judiciary, the state's attorney, the sheriff, myself, Joe Gordon, we've been on committees together talking about jail overcrowding, and we're doing our best to kind of move things along as quickly as possible. But, you know, we don't get to pick and choose our cases. If they file X number, we get appointed to X, and that's what we do.
Ms. Bergson.
Some of the kids that I used to know through one of my sons said that they had been caught with drugs and been told, if you plead guilty to a felony, you'll do no jail time. So without ever seeing a lawyer, they just plead guilty to a felony and do no time. And they don't have any idea what that means for the rest of their lives. Can you explain that?
Well, I mean, I can't comment on a particular case, but I mean, certainly we get the police reports from the state, and we negotiate what the state offers, and we do our best to talk with clients before court. We're always open for appointments. People make appointments. Hopefully they do. And we convey the offer, and hopefully the attorneys are telling them, here are the pros to a trial, the cons of a trial, the pros of a plea offer, the cons of a plea offer, and ask them what they want to do. The choice is ultimately up to a defendant, to a person charged with a crime, whether they want to take a plea or not. But I can't comment on a particular case. So,
any other questions? Ms. Holderfield.
Thank you. I just had a question. Do you have any statistics that are relative to students that are actually in the McLean County area versus the Champaign County area? How many are relative to ISU and the university?
I mean, the number of clients we represent who are in school.
Correct.
We don't keep those statistics. The public defender's office is appointed to represent people who can't afford lawyers of their own, and we will represent juvenile delinquents, but we'll also represent college students if they're charged with felonies and can't afford a lawyer. I think there's giggling over here because if you're a U of I student and you're charged with a misdemeanor, their student fees have already paid for student legal services. basis. So Tom and others there may have statistics on how many misdemeanors they represent, but we don't keep that statistic.
Okay, so there's no reference at all whatsoever according to our population, because of course our population counts at the University of Illinois.
I have no information.
That's an inappropriate question for me, right?
No, it's not an inappropriate question. I don't know. I don't keep statistics on the number of people we represent who are college students or anything like that. Probation might have some of that information. Tom may have more, but I don't.
Mr. Betts.
Can you answer that, Tom?
I can. You can go to my website. I keep statistics on the use of our office space in misdemeanor cases, traffic cases, etc., going back to 1978. So if you go on my website, you can get every annual report and every drop of that information. We make it all public. I will tell you, statistically, students are the single lowest risk population in Champaign County for misdemeanors or felony. They are more likely to be victims than they are to be perpetrators. They are very, very low in the system.
And what's that website, Tom?
I wish.
Google Student Legal Services. At UIUC, that ought to cover it. Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you,
Randy. Okay. We also have our monthly reports. We have animal control, Head Start, probation, and as you heard, the file for the public defender is not available online yet. We roll it in anyway. Would anybody like to make a motion to put those on file?
I'd like to make an omnibus. I can never say that. Omnibus motion to put all of these reports on file.
Okay. Second. That's a motion by Ammons, a second by Quisenberry. Ms. Petrie, you have a question?
I read the Head Start report as best as I could. It doesn't work well on my computer, so I didn't get the bottom half of every page. But however, on page 2, there was a comment in the report, eliminate expenditures by major categories. And I wondered if you would mind asking the folks at Head Start to get a better understanding why that decision was made, because I would think for us on the county board reading that report, it would be helpful for us to have those expenditures by major categories. I do understand why the folks at Head Start, maybe because they see this material all the time, it's just repetition for them, but for us who only see this on a monthly basis, it might be helpful.
Well, those categories will be broken down in the budget, and I can certainly inquire further. This is on page 2?
Well, on my computer, okay. It turns out to be page 2. It's obviously going to be the top part of page 2, since, as I said, I couldn't read any of the bottom parts of any of the pages of these reports, and it states, eliminate expenditures by major categories in the report. Okay, I appreciate you checking
that's
on that.
Something to follow up. In
Thank
the near future,
much.
We're going to have them in to talk with everybody. Ms. Michaels.
Just a little side note. Ms. Cohort and I were both at the meeting, and that was, I think, one of the things that we discussed is the way the financials and the way the expenditures and stuff were written out. So I think they're going to be working on that to have it a little more simplistic and have it more realistic. We were both there at that meeting.
Okay. Mr. Alex.
I guess an objection to the motion. I'm not sure we can receive and place on file the public defender's report if we haven't actually gotten it yet.
Sorry.
I was wondering if Ms. Ammons would be willing to withdraw that from the motion as a friendly amendment.
Okay, just a clarification. Isn't that what what did we just get from the public defender's? I thought that was the report.
We got the quarterly report or semi-annual report from the public defender's office. The monthly report is different from what he passed out. There's something he does every month that he's up through November that, as he was saying, the file was corrupted. I couldn't download it, but apparently it exists and it will be back on. So that has not been posted online.
Well, actually, it has been posted, and there is a technical problem with the posting. He submitted the report, and it exists. It doesn't show up when you go to the internet to open it because of a technical problem. That will be fixed tomorrow.
My point remains, it's a distinction without a difference. If we haven't seen the report, we can't accept it.
Point of order. Actually, you don't have to see the report. It'd be nice to see it.
Yeah, it can be placed on file if people vote to put it on file. But if we can either have a vote on that as an amendment, or it can be accepted friendly. We can certainly have the motion to strike it if there's a majority in the body.
I'll just say in response to that we. Usually these are brought to us electronically as opposed to in this body over the last year, and so we've normally placed them on file so that the public can see them right away. So that's why my motion would be to receive them as an omnibus motion and place them on file as is. The correction will go up tomorrow, and they should be available for folks to see.
Are you wanting to offer that as a unfriendly amendment?
Yeah, I would move that we exclude receiving the public defender's report because we haven't seen it yet, and I don't know how we can.
Second from Michaels. Received it. Is there any discussion on the amendment to take the public defender's report off of the omnibus motion? Any discussion? Ms. Ammons?
One point of clarification. The public defender's November 2010 then would be moved to, if this passed, it would be moved to the full county board to accept and place on file at that point? Is that? It will come to the next policy, next month's meeting. Okay,
so it would be on the justice records for next month if this passes.
And my understanding is that if the public wants to see it, it's going to be posted on the website tomorrow, so we're not interfering with the public's access to this information.
Correct. Any other comments on Mr. O'Connor?
Just a question, if there were something on there that caused this to come to a roll call vote and we noted not to put it on file, what would happen? Is this a real issue, or have we got a little wheel spin going here?
Ms. Anderson.
I guess I'd just comment, before we got them to the website, we used to get copies. We might ask questions, but my understanding, and if I remember, we placed them on file. We couldn't change them. It was a report. And if the public wanted to see them then, and that was, what, 2 years ago, maybe? We had to come here and look at them. And I think we make it much more accessible now to the public by, having them on the website. I have no idea how many people look at them.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay. All those in favor of taking public defender off of the omnibus motion, I'd say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
I'd say the motion fails. Okay. Well, we have all four still on the motion. Is there any other discussion on the main motion? No, there's not. Okay. All in favor of placing these reports on file, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes. That ends the monthly report section. The chair has no other business, and there will be nothing that will be on the full board agenda. Thank you.
It's just there. You know.
Good evening. Let's get started with ELOC. I hope you brought your other packet from last week, which gives us all of the data. But if not, John will bring us up to date. First, direction to the zoning administrator regarding proposed zoning ordinance text amendments, number one.
Request to amend the Champaign County Zoning Ordinance to implement land resource management plan policies 4.1.5, 4.1.7, and 4.1.9. John, and on 4.1, I hope all of you have seen this update and simplified version of 4.1.9. It should be on your desk or given out to you at the caucuses. John?
I want to explain where we're going on this first.
First, let me have a motion to...
So moved.
So moved, Anderson. Rosales the second. And let's go for discussion.
Well, first, I guess we should be clear on what the motion is. In fact, in the packet, the agenda, we laid out three alternative policies. And so I think the board needs to be real clear about which policy you're moving. And in addition to the policy, that's on page 81 and 82, in addition to the policy about 415, there is this, we need guidance on policy 419. We mislabeled it 417 in the packet. We apologize for that. But recall that the current ordinance includes an exemption for lots that are 35 acres or greater. There's no limit on those lots. And policy 419 is intended to let you reaffirm that 35-acre minimum or increase it, or even make it smaller if that's your choice. But we need some number to use in the updating the ordinance. And so pick a policy and pick a number for 419.
Do I have any discussion on? Okay. Let me make the first compromise. 4.1.5 on page 83. I would like us, at least I feel that is the compromise. We've worked with the Farm Bureau on this. We've had this discussion over the last few weeks, and we feel that the 4.1.5 compromise on page 82 is where we'd like to go with it. And if you agree with that, that would be the first part. The second part would be if you, on 4.1.9, would go with, if you want to go with the 35-acre exemption, is fine. Is there anyone here who wants to change that to a different number? Different size, please speak now or forever hold your peace. Carol.
I would like Mr. Hall to just give me some layman's term, what the difference is, layman's terms, from if I wanted to go from 35 to 38, tell me what this means.
Well, it means that you have to buy, instead of just buying 35 acres, you have to buy 38 if you want to build a home and claim it to be agriculture. From a land use perspective, that means there's going to be slightly fewer of those 38-acre tracts than there would be of the 35. Probably not enough for us to worry about. But I think that's really should be your concern here is, do you believe that allowing 35-acre tracts, lots rather, to be created with no limit is going to result in too many homes, too many what we would really consider to be non-farm homes in the rural area? Or would you like to see a larger number and even fewer? Now, remember that these are homes that are built on 35 acres, and they don't cut out a small area for the home itself. It has to be on the entire 35 acres. Personally, I don't think I know anyone that can afford to buy 35 acres of Champaign County farmland and then put a home on it and not have to worry about a mortgage, because it's the mortgage that's going to require the small lot to be cut out just for the home, because 35 acres of Champaign County farmland is worth close to $200,000 today, I believe, and you're just not going to get that much land
on a mortgage. So it is complicated, but when it comes right down to it, how many of these lots do you want to let be created? If you think the current standard, 35 acres, doesn't result in too many, there would be no need to change it.
Any other discussion?
Carol, you want to follow up? Let her follow up. You'll be next, Lloyd.
It initially talked about 1 per 40, which is where we started at. No, 1 lot per 40. Okay, so am I speaking about the wrong one?
The 1 per 40 referred to the numbers of small lots
that could be on,
that could be created.
Okay.
The 35 or 40 or 60 or 80 refers to the size of lots that can be created with no limit.
I think the no limit is what gets me right here. That's what got me. That can be created with no limit, meaning that I can continue to buy 35 acres and add it all up? Is that what you're saying?
Actually, there is a limit, and the limit is how much land do you have to begin with, which determines how many of these lots you could sell. So, for example, a farmer that owns 80 acres, right now, our zoning ordinance would let him sell 2 35-acre lots. And in fact, those folks could probably claim that they're agriculture, and we would not charge a fee for their permit to build a home. So there's, first of all, and a farmer that had 240 acres could sell up to 6 of those. To begin with, there aren't that many huge tracts in the county anyhow, but there are a matter of hundreds. And so hundreds divided by 2 or 3, you know, it is a sizable number eventually. But I don't want anybody to think that we're saying, oh my goodness, there's a lot of 35-acre lots out there with homes on them. The fact of the matter is we probably don't even know how many there are, because those folks probably are not even talking to us. So I don't want you to think that we're seeing a rush and, oh my goodness, you have to change this. I just don't want you to be surprised in the future if you kept the 35-acre standard and there's more that ultimately end up being created than you thought there might be.
I just want to make one thing clear. Just prior to our committee of the whole meeting, Brad Yukon called me from the Farm Bureau. He's the manager of the Farm Bureau, and restated the Farm Bureau's position that they wanted 80 acres in this resolution, and they were not changing their opinion from the last time that they spoke to us. First Lloyd, then Caulfield, then Stan.
Thank you, Lloyd. 35 acres. Now, what I'm trying to get at, are you talking about putting single families on a lot or what?
Putting what?
Single family houses.
Yes, sir.
Well, why would he want 35 single houses unless he went to a subdivision?
No, it's on 1/3.
I think the only people that really can afford...
I ain't never heard of that.
It does happen.
He built a lot on each acre. If you divide by 35, an acre makes a good lot. So if you... I ain't never heard nobody doing that.
Well, it does happen.
He's supposed to go to a subdivision or have one house on that 35 acres for his use.
Well, since the county has limited the number of one-acre lots that can be created, we've been limiting that since 1998, and it's gotten progressively smaller over the years. We're being asked now to lower it again, and I believe that every time you lower it, you're increasing the likelihood that at least a 35-acre lots will be created, because recently, when times were good, more people could afford a 35-acre lot. Again, I don't know anybody who can, but I know that there are a lot of people in Champaign County that can. So the point is, Lloyd, Mr. Carter, in the long run, when we lower the number of lots that people can do by right, it's going to put more pressure and make it more likely that these large tracts do, in fact, get created. I can't put a number on that. I don't think it's going to be a great number. But it, again, is one of those things that we have a policy that says Champaign County will adopt a minimum lot size for these kinds of lots. And you've already got 35 acres as your standard. You can keep it at 35 and not change it.
How many houses consist of a subdivision?
Well,
is it 20 or what?
Well, no, in your subdivision regulations, you can have a one lot subdivision, a one house subdivision. So that's not really part of the consideration. But you're being asked to approve an amendment to the ordinance which will limit the creation of new lots to no more than two on any parcel bigger than 40 acres. Whether you've got 40 acres or 80 acres or 120 acres or 160 acres, only two lots by right is what you're contemplating adopting in this amendment. That's clear.
I guess what I'm getting at, if a guy had 30 acres and he was going to build more than one house, he would have to go under a subdivision standards. He just couldn't build a house by a house.
Exactly. And Champaign County would call that a...
Well, isn't that the law already?
Yes, sir.
I can't get this. We're setting aside the 1 acre if you... I don't know.
Stephanie?
So what we're doing, I'm trying to get this straight in my head. Years ago, in 1973, I think we had the 5-acre plat act. So the 5-acre plat act then just goes away, or do we still have that implemented? That's
okay.
One question. I've got a couple.
You want me to deal with these one by one?
Please.
Okay. The 5 acres for the plat act is actually a subdivision concern, as in the subdivision regulations. Insofar as zoning is concerned, when the county board adopted the 3-acre maximum lot size on best prime farmland, you said that, I mean, what that really means is you didn't want to see any more, and I know, Stephanie, you weren't on the board then, but what the board said was they didn't want to see 5-acre lots created on best prime farmland.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is for lots to be created on best prime farmland, that 5-acre plat act exemption is no longer relevant.
And we still have 5-acre lots that are out there. We have several 5 acres. We have 3 acres. We have 1 acre.
That's right.
Okay. So now what we're saying is to the farming community at large, if you have an 80-acre tract of land, then you can subdivide 35 acres and 35 acres, and there's 10 acres left over. So that 10 acres left over, the farmer then can occupy that?
Well, a farmer can occupy any amount of land he wants, whether it's less than an acre or thousands of acres, because he's exempt.
Okay, so that the farming community as a whole is exempt from this ordinance?
Yeah, the only thing in the zoning ordinance that applies to farmers is the setback from the street.
Okay, so then the common person comes along, they're not a farmer, they purchase the 35 acres, they have to or decide they're going to build a house and a barn and so forth, then because of lending practices, they will probably have to utilize commercial lending agriculture versus the regular FHA, Freddie Mac conventional financing. So this will be more restrictive to the average bear that comes along that say they want a mini farm ed or they just want the land, they want to hunt, because it's 40 acres, I believe, that you can hunt on. So this will then limit the amount of people that can come along and make the purchase and build a home and basically have the American dream of purchasing a property if this is what they so choose, that they're capable of doing. Conventional financing is out of the question.
I think this is relevant to purchase of 35-acre tracts.
Mm-hmm.
And in your zoning ordinance right now, you've said we don't care how many 35-acre tracts are created. But one thing, I'm glad you mentioned that, I wanted to point out.
Okay.
Another thing that the amendment for 415 does, to my way of thinking, it plugs the mortgage lot loophole that is in the existing ordinance, because in the existing ordinance, we don't say that if you have to create a lot for mortgage purposes, it counts as one of these lots. And I try to operate that way, but if someone wants to disagree, I've got nothing in the ordinance to point to. The ordinance that's before you makes it very clear that if you have to create a lot for mortgage purposes, it counts as one of these either one or two lots that can be created.
Thank you,
thank
Stephanie.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stan.
Stephanie basically asked some of the same questions I was. It is confusing at best, and I've told John
that. That helped clarify it a bit.
Yeah, but the 35, I mean, basically has been there. John, right. My understanding is you're just wanting to set some sort of policy, whether it's 35, 80, or what have you,
right.
So that you can fine-tune that. It's not that we're trying to do anything to harm anybody. It's just he wants a policy so he's has some teeth or whatever it is he's wanting, but correct?
Well, you've got a policy. It doesn't include the size, and so now we're trying to get guidance on that size.
Right. So the 35's worked, and I guess I would just say, like I told you, yes, there are people that can buy that type of land, but more than likely, you know, you have to find a willing buyer, and you have to be able to expend that kind of money and build it. And nowadays, people just aren't doing that because they can't afford their gasoline, let alone building a house. But with that said, I don't see it as a big issue. I just think that if we push it up, my mindset is that where I've heard this 80 by the Farm Bureau, it makes it harder and harder for someone that may, you know, like if Ben Cartwright was still around, I mean, if he wanted to build the Ponderosa, the poor guy had to buy 80 acres versus 35.
Well, Mr. Cartwright would qualify for the ag exemption.
Any other discussion? Oh, I'm sorry, Chris.
I'm actually going to make offer a motion, and we'll see how it goes. I'm going to offer a motion to defer item number one on the ELOC agenda for the following reason. I mean, this is a very technical amendment, and I'm concerned. I mean, having served on plan commissions before, I am not comfortable with this yet in terms of any unintended consequences that we may be creating through this. I mean, this seems to be very fluid. There's been compromises going on, you know, month to month. And I'm really not comfortable personally proceeding with this until I feel like the target has stopped moving and the county staff and all the relevant stakeholders have had a chance to look at this and really satisfy themselves that we understand the implications of this. And perhaps I'm the only uninformed county board member here on this issue. But my feeling is that in contrast to the other items on the ELEC agenda tonight, which seem to be relatively straightforward, this is a highly technical issue. It's clearly a controversial issue. I mean, I don't... I refer to some of the comments that Mr. Thompson made. I mean, I'm not probably of the same belief he is that regulating agriculture is sort of some nefarious plot. I think it's, frankly, sort of a matter of national energy and food security that we make sure that we're preserving the ability of future generations to eat and have energy. But I don't want to go too much into that. My feeling is just that I think this is a very important issue. It's an issue that's going to have long-ranging consequences, and I'm not comfortable with the way that this has been handled in terms of sort of month-to-month changes in what we're looking at, and I'm just not comfortable moving forward with this yet at this point. And I think I would be more comfortable if I've had time to sit down and look at this. So, yes, I'm offering a motion to defer.
Motion to defer, and I have a second by Brendan. Any discussion on the motion to defer? We'll start with Brendan, who seconded, and then we'll go with Carol and Jan.
Also, having served as a planner and served on ELEC, I don't know if everyone else is as foggy on the details here as I am. I take pride in trying to study these issues, and there's still confusion to me. And if someone can help me to be less dense when it comes to these items, it would be really appreciated, because I really don't understand enough to feel comfortable with my vote. And I agree that the other items on the agenda tonight seem much more straightforward. I think that we've had consensus on those generally, and so I'm prepared to support the deferral because I like to know what I'm voting on.
Carol and Jan.
I partially agree with Mr. McGinty in this way, that I thought I got it. I thought I understood, finally, what this is about. In my mind, it makes me to believe that the LRMP, the purpose of this document is for us to put the priorities of the county forward, meaning do we want to, in this area, preserve agriculture and farming capabilities, which is why we need to say 35 or 80 or 79 or whatever number we want to choose, as opposed to turning all these plots into small 35 acres, one home here and one home there. And I think I just got that. So this was my aha moment. So I'm not going to stand in your way, but I believe that I've had an aha moment on that, and I believe it's about the priorities of the county board as a body and what is important to us, where we want to retain the agricultural value of the land and the production and so on and so forth, or reduce the number to officially make it 35 or 25 or whatever and allow the building and subparting of the land at that point. So I think I got it right. Is that right, John? I mean, am I representing that idea correctly?
Yeah, I thought that was fairly accurate. And again, we're here to answer questions tonight. I had your question. I answered it. I don't know that I've had
to discuss it.
I had Mr. Carter's question. I believe those are the only questions that I've been asked tonight.
Jan?
I really don't want to see it deferred. It seemed like the steering committee spent a year and a half, you know, wrestling with this whole thing, brought it to us. We accepted the LRMP, and now we're trying to implement it. And I agree that it's very complex, and I have a hard time getting my mind around it, too. But we've had two study sessions because we had questions, so we had a study session. And we had more questions, so we had another study session. Now we're having a committee meeting, and I'd rather see us try to get our thoughts together and proceed. Or we're, you know, I think we started this, what, in October, and it's been deferred and deferred, and here we are in March. I think we need to get moving.
Ralph?
I'd like to offer a roll call vote.
Okay, roll call. Second, Patsy, on the deferral.
Yes, on the deferral. I certainly support this. This gives me a chance to publicly thank Professor Reynolds, who teaches land use law at the law school. I went over there to talk to her about this section, and my major takeaway to share with everybody is that she could not understand the meaning of this section. And that tells me that we need to take time to really get this clarified so that our goal as a county board should be that any document that we approve and okay should be readable and user-friendly by the public, and that's not the case here. And if it takes us a little bit longer to iron this out, then that's in the best interest of everybody in the county. Second, in this deferral, I would ask John and Susan to tie together a bit more for everybody on the county board some of the ramifications of this, because as you read this section and then you read some of the other sections and the size of the acreage varies, there is so much room for discretionary decision making that just gets potentially can cause a lot of trouble down the line. And I shared with Susan and John the results of the conversation with Professor Reynolds, and so they know my thoughts on the imperativeness of us getting this document so it's user-friendly for everyone.
That's true.
page 82 explains it. This picture is kind of confusing, but page 82 explains it beautifully, I think. The whole thing.
Before we take this vote, I want you to understand something here. Tonight we have a discussion period on this. If we defer it, when are we going to discuss it? The next time? And the next time? We're here now. We can answer your questions now. So if you're going to defer it, when are we going to defer it to? We're going to defer it to the next committee of the whole, and we're going to sit here and then ask the same questions again a month from now. Why don't we ask those questions now before we defer it to another committee of the whole and ask the same questions a month from now? Lloyd.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is what I've been saying all along. If you do things to start with right, you wouldn't be getting into these. You're letting the horse out of the barn to close the gate. That's ridiculous. That's what's wrong with this. Now, if you hadn't done this up front, got everybody, we'd be out of here. We wouldn't be sitting here trying to, you know, discuss something when really you're not going to get any place unless we get all these entities together inside the fund.
Chris.
As of 2 hours ago, my understanding is the Farm Bureau is still clarifying their position on this. Now, I'm not saying the Farm Bureau is the only organization that should have input into this, but my feeling is if you're asking, you know, why do we come to these study sessions and talk about it, and then why can't we resolve it tonight? Well, the reason is the stakeholders don't seem to me to have sorted this out for themselves yet. Farmland is disappearing over time, and I think after, you know, many generations without some type of protection like this, we'll be in trouble. I don't think farmland is going to disappear at such a rate that we can't take another month to get this right. That's, I guess, all I have to say. I would encourage everyone.
Brendan, you raise your hand. Okay. Stephan.
I would just, you know, I guess I'm one of those that I'm just still not feeling great about it. 90% of the state of Illinois is in farmland. And I think sometimes we forget that. And so, therefore, I personally am going to support the deferment.
Support the deferment?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, we're going to take a vote.
We need a roll call.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is there any more discussion? Wait a minute. John? I'm sorry. Sorry, Kat. John?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it should be answered. The question you asked, Mr. Chair, is...
Can you hear?
Sorry, again.
Yeah, you're a little closer to the mic.
I think your questions have been answered. Where are we deferring this to? And I'll ask the maker of the motion... Just a friendly question. When are we deferring this to, and what would you like from the staff to define?
I would like to defer it to the next ELUC COW meeting, and in the interim, I at least personally will have some more one-on-one with staff to clarify some concerns I have that have arisen recently based on comments we've heard from stakeholders, and I will encourage other county board members to do the same.
Well, I can tell you Ms. Petrie did, and I thought she has been clarified, and I thought we discussed that when John, Brendan, some others. Now, the staff is open to any board member who wants to discuss it, and we've been at this for months. If there's any question in your mind, all you got to do is pick up a phone or step into the office and discuss it. Brendan.
Well, based on that, Mr. Chair, Chris brought up a good point, and that is that something that the Republican side of our board is not aware of, and that's at our caucus. I mean, Brad calls you during the caucus. Our caucus is done. We all leave. You're on the cell phone, and we don't know what the status of that is, and then you come here and you say, this is what the Farm Bureau thinks. I've seen these interest groups change their mind on issues like this multiple times, so I think that I agree that it's important that we get some solidification of this before we, it's very hard for me to cast a vote when I don't know what I'm voting on.
To clarify that, the Farm Bureau stepped up a few weeks ago, made a direct statement concerning the compromise and the 80 acre.
What is this?
And the call
to me this evening was to reaffirm that exactly there was no change of policy or change of opinion by the Farm Bureau. I was just pushing, I was just communicating to you what was communicated to me by the manager of the Farm Bureau. John.
I guess I'll support deferment only because I think I'd rather like to hear more, since it's been emphasized, Farm Bureau, more voices, preferably the whole board action instead of a handful on a small committee, what really the Farm Bureau backs, because that's what you have right now is a small committee on the Farm Bureau. And I would like to hear from more, preferably the board itself, what they decide. And I told that to Mr. Watson, to the president of Farm Bureau. So that's why I'll vote for deferment.
All right, so one second. I'll have more discussion. We're going to defer this, if we vote affirmative, to the next committee of the whole, ELOC. And I would hope that each and every one of the board members who have any questions in their mind, sorry, John, here comes the big one. Okay? That you call John or Susan and you get together and you clarify in your mind exactly what we're trying to accomplish here. Does that sound okay to the board at this point? Lloyd.
Now,
yes,
that is fine.
Okay.
Have anybody ever notified the people that own the property out there? See, this is where you're going. I can vote tonight. If you tell me, yeah, I said I didn't notice to all the home, you know, the property owner, to come to the meeting, and they don't show up, I can vote for that. There's no problem.
Lloyd, you'll get that discussion, but first we're calling on the deferral. Let's call you. What's that?
I'd like to call a question.
All right, call the question on the deferral, okay? Diane, go ahead.
The only thing I had was
talking about deferring this, Lloyd. Okay, you want to speak to that? Do you want to defer it or not?
Well, I want you to answer my question.
Were the farmers notified? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
We've had public hearings on this.
No.
I'm not
going to
order.
If you're going to rip me off, please let me. If I don't come, it's my fault. If you notify me to come to a hearing that's going to have something to do with my community, a house or whatever, okay, I don't show up, that's my fault. But now if you go, which I'm blocked from where I say this, most of the laws that I don't even know about, because the same stuff going here. When I know about it, either one of our people been arrested, then, I didn't even know that law was on the book. This is the problem we have. You need to let people know what you're doing, and if they don't show up, look, I can vote on it. But when you tell me you're going to sit up here and make decisions for them, and I got a problem with that.
Okay. All right. Kat, please call the roll.
Alex.
Yes.
Ammons.
No.
Anderson.
No.
Benzel.
Yes.
Berkson.
No.
Betts.
No.
Carter.
No.
Coert.
No.
Holderfield.
Yes.
James.
Yes.
Jay.
Sorry, Jones.
Kurtz.
No.
Langenheim.
No.
McGinty.
Yes.
Michaels.
Yes.
Nudo.
Yes.
O'Connor.
Yes.
Petrie.
Yes.
There's my back. Richards.
Yes.
Rosales.
No.
Sapp.
Yes.
Schrader.
Yes.
Weibel.
Motion carries. 13 to 9. Motion carries. Deferred. I would ask, we'll move to the next, but please, you have a month.
get a hold of John, get a hold of Susan, pose your questions, bring your materials with you, and sit down with them, and let's get this thing completed next month. It would be great if we came in next month and we called for a vote on this, and everybody said, I know exactly what we're voting for, and we all vote for it without one bit of discussion, I hope. Ron?
One of the problems with that is when we show up an hour before the meeting or show up at the meeting and make a disclosure that we had a discussion an hour before the meeting and this or that has changed. So, you know, I mean, that doesn't sit well. So one board member doesn't drive the decisions of this board.
That's true.
So, you know, you ask us to get informed, yet then the rules change at the end. But don't bring that to us then.
Okay, next. Number two, request to amend the Champaign County zoning ordinance to implement land resource management plan policies 4.16, 4.31, 4.34. John, just give them a quick overview. First, a motion.
So moved.
Ms. Hollifield, second by Mr. Rosales. Discussion. John?
Well, from the first time we discussed this with the board, we made a change. The change is on page 88. It reduces... it changes the proposed finding regarding public services. It gets rid of adequacy and just talks simply about availability. We retained adequacy and safety of roads because there are clear guidelines that IDOT has published. They're easy to apply in a general way, and we've done that for a long time. We've never had any complaints. But I think actually the comments about using adequacy for public services was a good comment, and so that's the only change that we've made. Hopefully that will be enough. But.
Okay. Any discussion? No discussion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. All right, 3A. Wow, that was a good one. Request to amend the Champaign County zoning to implement land resource management plan objective 4.4 by adding a special use permit for the RRO. So moved. Jan Mangenheim, second. Discussion, John, it was just a quick one. This one's easier than the other two.
From the first time the committee discussed this, we decided to separate the special use permit from the special use permit standard conditions. At the study session, I was just tickled pink with the discussion that the committee had about the various standards. But be that as it may, we weren't certain that we'd answered everybody's questions, and so we thought we might have better luck by splitting the special use permit from the standards.
Any discussion? Chris?
John, if you can just confirm my interpretation of your comments here. This is the reason this is proposed to be a special use permit. The proposal here is that any RRO would require a special use permit, is that correct? And that the basis for that is that the state's attorney is of the opinion that we are on stronger statutory footing for imposing conditions in the context of special use permit conditions as opposed to special conditions just on the zoning. Is that correct?
Yes, because by its very nature, an RRO is relevant to a specific plan. We never suggest that you condition any other rezoning on a plan.
So this is comparable to what would be sort of a planned unit development type situation in an urban.
It is more or less the equivalent, although that process actually allows much more flexibility than what we're proposing.
Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's move on. Now that's 100% there. Okay.
3D, request to amend the Champaign County zoning ordinance to implement land resource management plan objective 4.4 by adding standard conditions to the special use permit for the RRO. So moved. Carol Ammons, second. Jan Anderson. Discussion. John, just give it a quick.
Well, this proposes the seven conditions that the committee discussed at the study session. From the staff level, we're so relieved with having the special use permit that the standard conditions aren't necessary. However, if you can identify any of these conditions that you know are a minimum condition for you And if you can adopt that, then you're telling every subsequent divider in the future, this is what the Champaign County Board expects. Right now, there's nothing like that in the ordinance regarding when they should propose a new street or propose some other way to get access to lots, or for any of these other five other things. And so, to the extent that there's support on any of these, even if it's only one, it would be a big improvement over the existing situation.
Any discussion? Questions? Patsy?
Yes, I'd like to convey to the rest of the board the remainder of my conversation with Professor Reynolds and what I conveyed to John and Susan. If you look at the zoning ordinance and you read through on the RRO, it is not in a user-friendly format. And I said I would support this, these seven criteria that are being put forth for us to vote on tonight, with the hope that the work program that the previous board has approved with John and Susan be adjusted or amended to include that they create a procedural flowchart for anybody who is considering an RRO, because if you read the zoning ordinance, it is not easy to follow. There's too many references to other sections in the zoning ordinance, and in the spirit of making things more user-friendly for everybody in the county, I'm not very fond of the fact that a citizen has to hire an attorney to read our ordinance to understand it. And so I share that with John and Susan, and I think that's something that will not be difficult to do down the line at some further time. Thank you.
Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay, other business. Request for a letter of support for Senate Bill 2195. So moved. What is it? It was in your yellow packet from last time. I'm sorry. There it was, and here it is again. I'm sorry. Okay. Can you give us a little on this bill? All right, John, so that they understand a little bit what we're talking about here.
Okay. Senate Bill 2195, and there now is a House bill that is somewhat different. It proposes to amend existing legislation to allow for a process by which certain counties in the state can adopt stormwater management fees. Now, Champaign County is in a class of counties that isn't even discussed in this bill until page 116, because Champaign County is a county that is subject to the Illinois General MPDES permit number ILR-40, as is McLean County, Sangamon County, and I'm not familiar with any other counties outside of collar counties or metro counties that are subject to that requirement. Suffice to say, because we have a populated area in our county of, I believe it's 100,000 people, that being Champaign, Urbana, and Savoy, and Champaign County has facilities, road ditches within that area, that group and also the U of I, I guess, we are bound to ILR 40 permit requirements under the state EPA. Now, frankly, the process allowed by this change is a very complicated process. It would involve a degree of cooperation with municipalities that we've never seen. Frankly, right now, I don't think it's even necessary here in Champaign County. It's absolutely necessary in counties like Kankakee and Peoria. They have a much greater need for this given the impact of these requirements on what the counties do there. someday, I'm sure, Champaign County will have greater need. And at that time, this legislation would let you do a joint planning project. It completely exempts farmland and drainage districts. You can't adopt any requirement related to farmland or drainage districts. But for other kinds of uses that generate stormwater impacts, you could go through a two-year planning process. You could identify what these fees might be. You have to put it up to a vote by all the voters in the county. It has to be approved. The House bill that's been proposed would make the property tax caps applicable to this fee. So that's sort of it in a nutshell. It wouldn't do anything until you went through that process, made the decision to go through that process. If you don't go through that process, this legislation, if it's adopted, won't affect this county at all.
Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't see your hand there, Al.
Yeah, when we looked at this in the packet, it was not included. And I would assume that we didn't cover this. This is new territory for some of us. I've never heard about, you know, an explanation on it prior to, because we did not have enough time in the last meeting. This was all deferred. So we never discussed this. And it's not in our packet now, and no, some of us didn't bring our packet. So
it was in the yellow packet.
I understand that, but it says, you know, in blue it's not there. I thought the 2195 was having to do with the sheriff's office issue. So I just thought it was a... We never discussed this. This was deferred. So I would move to defer this.
I was just going to, since it's not in, I have a second already. Okay. Stan, for deferral. Go ahead, Astrid.
Why are we discussing it at all if it has nothing to do with us?
The county board chair was requested by the person who wrote the legislation. He was calling all counties that this could apply to see if they could support it. And obviously, before the county board chair could provide any kind of support by means of a letter, which is how these things are generally done, it has to come before the full committee. This is not urgent, but if you do get a chance to read this and you think that it sounds like a good thing, you might want to try to convey that to your legislators by means of formal action.
All right, let me just say one thing before I call on Stan. It's in your yellow packet. I don't think we have to put it into the next packet if we defer it? So we have to reprint all these again? Or will you go back and pick up your yellow and read it through then so that we can discuss it?
My point was, Mr. Chair, that we didn't discuss it.
No, I'm saying we. I don't want to have to reprint it all in the next packet if we have the yellow packet.
It's online. If there's no changes, it's available online.
Okay, Stan?
I know we're talking about the deferment, but it would help sometimes if John would give us a little brief overview prior to all that documentation outlining what it is it means, because, it's a lot of reading, and at times I have, I got to watch The Good Wife, so I run out of time to read the packet.
Just a little brief.
Okay. All right, we have a defer on the table. Sorry, Chris.
I'm sorry, this is not entirely in order, because it's not directly related to the motion to defer, but I'm wondering if you could, John, could you clarify why we would weigh in on this when it's specifically, it's basically a list of counties that does not include us, right?
No, Champaign County is one of the counties that this applies to.
We remember the Northeastern Illinois Planning Commission?
No, but as I reviewed on page 116, Champaign County is an ILR 40 county.
Okay, well, I'll certainly support the motion to defer, because reading the full text of the bill, I have not been able to discern how it applies to Champaign County.
The bill doesn't purport to indicate which counties are say this three times, ILR 40 counties or not. State EPA website, I believe, does contain a list of ILR 40 counties.
Okay, I'm reading from the synopsis, from the essentially the preamble of the bill. It indicates that This allows, this replies to metropolitan counties located in the area served by the NIPC, and references of the county shall only apply to those counties.
I agree. That preamble is completely misleading, and on page 116 of your agenda,
it
states it very clearly. It includes counties that are ILR 40 counties, which is specifically not included in that preamble.
Right.
That seems very odd to me. I agree.
Any other further discussion on deferral? All in favor of deferral, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Carries.
I'm done, but Cassie, you have...
It wasn't appropriate while we were discussing the deferral, but when this comes up again, if John would supply the Senate bill number, because there's a bill going through the Senate covering this same issue, and if we're going to talk about this, we need to do it in a full context.
Yeah, actually, that's the House bill.
This is the House
bill. And that's House Bill 3372.
House Bill, what is it?
3372. I guess I was just going to comment, according to what they said at the county meetings on Saturday, a lot of these bills right now are, you know, thousands being introduced. Comes back again, it could have a different number.
Okay, the block's done. Policy.
All right, good evening. First order of business on policy is a one Forest Preserve District Board appointment from a resignation of Christopher White, an appointment Mr. Weibel.
I nominate Robin Hall to fill Mr. White's term from March 18, 2011 to June 30, 2014.
It's been seconded by Ms. Anderson. Is there any discussion on this appointment? Mr. Weibel.
I think Mr. Hall is eminently qualified for this position. He was with the head of the Chaffee Park District for some 30-odd years. He more recently has worked with the University of Illinois, taught a few classes, but mostly works through the extension. He actually pretty much has a consulting business through the extension where he goes to other park districts, like, for example, now he's working with Muhammad Park District to help them develop the program. So I think he's very appropriate for this position.
Thank you. Any other discussion on this appointment? Ms. Petrie.
I'd like to ask Chair Weibel on this appointment and the two following, if there was just one application for each of these vacancies.
Only one for each one. I'll actually tell you that if there's more than one to be listed.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other comments? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Seeing none. Motion carries. A2, Rural Transit Advisory Group, appointment, Mr. Weibel.
I nominate Ms. Elaine Fowler Palencia, term from March 18, 2011 to November 30, 2012.
Second.
Second by Mr. Betts. Any discussion on this appointment, Mr. Weibel?
Ms. Plancher was nominated because we were looking for somebody who was familiar with handicapped residents of this county, and in her case, she has a family member who's been handicapped and is quite familiar with the problems and obviously the obstacles that person works with, and so this is why she was selected for that particular slot.
Thank you. Any other comments? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Motion carries. Item A3, Wisk Drainage District. Mr. Weibel.
Nominate Mr. Dennis Riggs, term from March 18, 2011 to August 31st, 2013.
Second.
Second by Mr. Schroeder. Any other discussion on this appointment? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Seeing none, motion carries. We'll move on to item B, County Administrators.
Actually, if I could, Madam Chair, request that we go to item C because Lieutenant Mills has been here for quite some time and he's here for that issue, and maybe we could dispense with that.
Is there any reason why we can't do that? Seeing none, we can move to item C and come back to item B. All right, so under C1, request for a letter of opposition to House Bill 1293, Sheriff's Mortgage Foreclosure Sales Revenue. Is there a motion on that?
So moved. Second.
Moved by Mr. Weibel and second by Mr. Richards. And now we'll open this up for response from the Sheriff's Department.
Good evening. I'm Greg Mills, a lieutenant with the Sheriff's Office. Sheriff Walsh asked me to briefly give you some information tonight on this House Bill 1293 that's currently proposed and pending. Give you a few reasons why he opposes the bill and why he's urging everyone on the county board to contact the representatives and oppose it. The current bill is very similar to House Bill 5055, which did make it into law last year. The bill outlines is currently we have a procedure for what we commonly refer to as sheriff sales or foreclosure sales. The sheriff's office processes those sales until a foreclosure sale is complete, and for that service, we gain revenue from that. An example of what we've gained in revenue in the last couple of fiscal years, I looked at it today, and I think the sheriff may have provided most of you with this information. Fiscal year 2009, Sheriff's Office or General Fund realized revenue of $127,800. Fiscal year 2010, approximately $133,800. So I believe that's roughly half of sheriff's fees revenue, so it is very significant for the Sheriff's Office. The proposed House bill would take away the sheriff's responsibility for this, giving it to a private entity, which would then make that revenue for themselves. The sheriff also would like you to know that currently we act as an independent, unbiased person of the court to handle the process. Sheriff's office, it may be myself that deal with the sheriff's sales. We're not allowed to bid on it. It also allows the public access to this process where they can come, they can view, they can bid if they so choose, which I think is something that would be lost if this bill goes through. Something else that the sheriff has heard as a reason to push this bill forward is that some people say that the sheriff's office unnecessarily delays the sheriff's sales. He wanted me to pass on to you it's untrue. If somebody goes through the procedures with the court, gets the paper signed, and then gives them to the sheriff's office, every second and fourth Friday, we hold the sheriff's sales. If we receive that on Wednesday by the close of business, that property could go on the sheriff's sales docket that Friday. So there is no such delay. We also act as a central clearinghouse, if you will, for any possible properties. So anyone has the ability to come to the sheriff's office and look at those properties if they so choose. Sheriff just wants you to know some of these facts and urge you, based on that, to oppose this bill. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Mr. Richards.
I don't have any questions. I just want to make the comment that we do not need to be making the foreclosure system any easier in this country, state, and county. Sheriff's offices do what they do and have, as far as I know, for hundreds of years to act as a check on banks, the banks who have been wrecking our economy with hundreds of thousands of foreclosures. We need to keep sheriff's offices in Illinois front and central in this process and keep them doing what they're doing. Many sheriff's offices in Illinois have acted as checks on foreclosure mills in this state, and we need to continue that.
Any other comments or questions for Mr. Weibel?
Lieutenant Mills, I support opposing this bill, but can you tell me where the money comes from? Does it come from the buyer? Where does the money come from that the sheriff receives the transaction?
The current fee for a completed sheriff's sale is $600, and that's statutorily is what we're able to charge.
So who pays that?
It will come from the person who purchases the property. Generally, that's going to be the plaintiff, which is the bank foreclosing. There are some circumstances where a third party comes in and decides that they want to bid on a property that they believe they can turn around quickly for a profit, but it is the buyer who is responsible for that fee.
Thank you. Mr. Betts.
I want to echo what Mike Richards said. Some of these situations with foreclosures, the banks have sold these loans and sold them and played with them to the point where when you try to do the title searches and stuff, you don't even know who the parties are. At least this is public, what's happening. What's happening in terms of the banking industry is not public, and it, despite what folks think, it's not very well regulated.
Ms. Ferguson.
These sales are really court ordered. It is a matter of...
Can you use your microphone so we can...
Sales are court ordered, and it is a matter of law enforcement. And I don't like more privatizing of law enforcement. I don't think it's a good idea, and I think that's what it is.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Mr. Weibel.
I just want to clarify to particularly the new members of the county board that a letter of support is, what I will do is I will write a letter of support starting tomorrow if this passes, in this case. I'll send it to all the legislators that are cover any part of Champaign County. Also send it to the Senate majority minority leaders and their assistants.
Mr. Betts and then Mr. Hunt.
I would ask the chair also to send that letter to Representative Lou Lang, who I've known for a while. Send it to him.
Mr. Alex.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Point of order. Is there a motion on the floor?
Yes.
Okay. I missed that.
Can you... All the way back here, Ms. Holderfield.
Thank you. I have participated in quite a few foreclosure sales. It's an ugly process, and I wholeheartedly agree that we need to oppose this bill. I want to keep our process as fair and as open as possible. I think that giving this to a private company is going to prohibit that from happening. We have an orderly fashion. There are many issues that are involved with the foreclosure process. A lot of it stems from the asset management company when it is sent from the bank to the asset management company, and so to say that it is the fault of the county sheriff's office is absolutely inaccurate, and I definitely absolutely want to keep our sheriff's department a part of this process.
Thank you. So we have a motion on the floor. I'll just call the question at this point. All in favor of Chair Weibel sending a letter in support tomorrow? In opposition, I'm sorry. Yes.
Support the opposition.
In support of our opposition, right.
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? CNN. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll go back to the county administrator's reports at this point.
The vacant positions listing is in your packet. For your information, as you will note, it continues to be fairly short. The second item is a recommendation for award of contract for vending services pursuant to RFP 2011-003 to Pepsi.
Move approval.
Move approval by Mr. Langenheim. Is there a second? By Mr. Rosales. Any questions for Ms. Busey on this item? Mr. Nudo.
The financial arrangements, they say you can have the right to audit reports. I guess it's kind of hard. Have you had ability to audit, commissions from cash kinds of things before?
From Pepsi? With our current contract, yes.
And how does that work? I'm just curious.
I mean, they provide us with a report that basically demonstrates the sales for each machine and the commission that is received from it, and we receive those on a regular basis.
Ms. Anderson.
On page 12, it
talks about the commission that says we'll pay a commission of
five. I can't hear you at all.
I was wondering if PepsiCo will pay the county a commission of Minnehaha Blank. Is there a figure?
We're still working with legal on this. You will have the final version of the final contract at the county board meeting, but we wanted to keep the process moving forward.
Any other questions on the vendor? Mr. Crowder, did you have a question?
I have one on the insurance.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Betts?
Traditionally, we use a portion of these vending profits to cover our employee recognition. Is that correct?
That's correct.
We don't usually get a huge amount of it.
The general corporate fund revenue from the vending machines is about $18,000 a year, and we usually budget about $4,000 for the employee recognition event, and it's viewed to have come directly from these proceeds.
Thank you.
Any other questions on this item? Seeing none. We have to vote.
Need a vote.
All in favor of the selected vendor for the vending machine service?
Aye.
Any opposition? Seeing none. Motion carries.
On the next item, I would like to give you an update. We released the RFQ for broker services for employee health insurance and related benefits. We have an evaluation team. We received 9 responses to that RFQ on February 15th. The evaluation team reviewed them and shortlisted 4 of those 4 firms last Tuesday. And the interviews with those 4 firms are scheduled for tomorrow with the evaluation team. I am requesting that you allow us to bring the recommendation for award of contract for this broker services directly to the county board meeting. We will be able to complete the work in time for the county board meeting, but we could not get all the meetings done in time for this meeting tonight.
All right. And Mr. Alex?
Is that a part of committee action tonight?
No.
Do we have to direct you to do that?
If the committee says that it's okay for us to present it to the full board, I think that would be appropriate, as long as the committee is okay with us placing it on the full board agenda.
All right, let's move that we send it directly to the board meeting next Thursday.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded by Mr. Curtis and Ms. Allen. Mr. Weiber, were you going to...
The other way, just ask if there's any objection. We already have a motion on the floor, so we'll go with that.
I just wanted to ask a question, and then I'll come back to you, Mr. Denzel and Ms. Petrie. The process of selecting the 4 that you have left, mm-hmm. will the county board then see the 4 that you have left, or will only see the one that you've selected?
You'll only see the one that we select. There are 2 county board members on the selection team, as well as an employee representative from each of the 3 major employee groups, as well as the insurance specialist and myself. And we will actually conduct the interviews. We did not anticipate that those interviews would be done for the full board.
And if I can just follow up for the committee's benefit, that the selection, once you select the process, will you give us a written description as to why you decide to go with that particular firm as opposed to another?
Well, as you had in your packet tonight, there will be some explanation of the basis for the recommendation from the committee, yes.
Thank you very much. Mr. Benzel and then Ms. Petrie.
I was just going to note my abstention on this vote. My employer did submit a response to this RFQ, so I won't be able to participate in this.
Okay. Ms. Petrie?
2 information questions. One is, I think it would be helpful for the board, even though there are 2 board members on the interview team, for the rest of the board to know who the 4 were, so we'd have a better understanding of why the one that gets chosen is chosen. And the second, is this just a year contract, 2-year contract that will be signed for this insurance?
This would probably be viewed as a 2-year contract initially with reopeners available for a 3rd and 4th year. It would be subject to county board approval.
Now, the reason I ask that, and maybe Chair Weibel passed along the information that we were given at the meeting last Saturday that the County Board Association put on, that they are beginning to start a process of insurance. And so I just wanted to make sure that if that developed in something that was a good potential for this county, that we weren't tied into a long-term insurance.
This does not tie you to insurance. This only ties you to the broker who will negotiate for you what your insurance is. So I have also seen presentations about a growing trend in developing, was it total broker benefits that you saw? Anyway, we are not precluded from moving to that program. This broker would be assisting us in the negotiation of having health insurance through that program.
Okay, thank you for that explanation.
Could you answer the second question about the evaluation team?
What
evaluation team who's on that evaluation? That was our second question.
Who the four firms are that we've shortlisted. The evaluation team is Astrid Berkson and Larry Sapp, John Farney representing AFSCME, Elizabeth Murphy from RPC representing non-bargaining employees, Brian Menenga from the Sheriff's Office representing FOP, and then Debbie Chow, our insurance specialist, and myself. Did you want to know who the four shortlisted firms were? They are Gallagher Benefit Services, Wells Fargo, CIBC of Illinois, and Barham Benefit Group.
Mr. Carter.
Yeah. Is HIPAA Alliance, is that one of the insurance companies that we are allowed to deal with?
No, and this particular selection has nothing to do with Health Alliance. That's the next step. We're selecting the broker who will help us find the best health insurance for our employees. Health Alliance is a health insurance provider.
Oh.
So we're not selecting Health Alliance here. We're selecting a broker who will help us look at Health Alliance and Blue Cross Blue Shield and all of the other potential health insurance providers in this area to negotiate the best deal for us for health insurance.
Because I just went over that program and they're kind of high. Fact of the matter, I couldn't get them because they cost me more than what.
Yes.
I could believe that.
So thank you.
I like to ask you, whosoever you pick, I like to talk to them too.
Thank you, Ms. Crowder. Any other questions on the broker selection process? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? That motion carries.
And the next item is, as you recall, last month you sent a recommendation for the creation of a new position at Emergency Management Agency for a deputy director to the Job Content Evaluation Committee. The committee did meet and review this new proposed position, and the recommendation is in your packet on page 32. The evaluation committee recommends that this position be classified in grade range I and created entitled Deputy Director. The job description is also included in your packet for information.
So moved.
It's been moved by Ms. Alex. Is there a second? Mr. Carter. Any discussion? Ms. Michaels.
Just a quick question. Where was the salary coming from on the budget?
There is an elimination of a clerical position in EMA, and the salary from that position will cover this position.
Thank you.
Ms. Petrie.
Again, an information question. Is there some place on the county website where one can read the description of these different grade ranges?
Yes.
Okay. Under what category?
It's the fiscal year 2011 salary ranges.
Ms. Coward? Can you use your microphone so we can hear?
I was going to ask about grade range one. And sorry.
That information is on page 33. The hourly rate minimum is $20.58 an hour. That would be an annual salary of $40,131. The midpoint is $25.72 an hour, which would be an annual of $50,154. This position cannot be filled at above the midpoint under the personnel policy, and I would expect that it would be filled somewhere between the minimum and the midpoint based on the qualifications of the individual who is selected to fill the position.
And if I can follow up, and then I'll call on you, Mr. James. Ms. Michael's question was asking the budgetary portion of this.
Mm-hmm.
Am I understanding that somewhere in between the minimum and the midpoint range, we have already budgeted in the EMA's budget to cover that amount?
Yes.
So the elimination of the clerk or the transfer of the clerk's position, that salary plus some other portion will cover this salary.
Right, primarily that clerk's salary, right.
Okay, thank you. Mr.
That was
James.
My question.
Thank
exactly.
you. Thank you, Mr. James. Any other, Mr. Allen?
I'm going to ask that same question again because I think when we discussed the transfer of the person out of this office, I thought that they were at a lower salary than this.
Actually, the individual who was in this position was paid right at $40,000 a year.
Okay, so that would be the low end of the range.
Right.
If we need to pay more, does EMA have that in their budget to make up the overage?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
thank you. Any other questions on this item? This does not require us to vote.
Actually, what you're doing here tonight is approving sending this to finance, which then you're going to do in 10 minutes.
All right. So we already have a motion on the floor, don't we? Then I will ask for a vote on this matter to move it on to finance. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? The motion carries. Let's see, County Clerk. Report. It's been moved by Mr. Bett and seconded by Mr. Michael Richards. Any discussion? The clerk has been so patient. He's always so patient here. I'm sorry, the clerk is not here. The treasurer is here. I'm thinking about the treasurer and talking about the clerk.
They don't even look alike.
They don't even look alike. Thank you, Mr. James. Any other discussion on this motion here? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Thank you. The final discussion item for policy is the recommended rules change for alignment of the committee of the whole meetings on page 39 and 40. I'd like to entertain a motion to accept this.
No. You can't vote on this tonight because your county board rules, number 8, requires this any rules change to be presented to county board members at least 14 days before policy. So you can vote on this in April, but this is here for discussion.
Well, we'd like to discuss this issue tonight. Mr. James.
Well, when I read this, I guess when we went to the committee of the whole, and I'm going to drag this out here a little bit, but the intention was we were cutting administrative staff because of the budget concerns we had, and then also we were going to go to 2 meetings, and I know we do have meetings scheduled for a study session, but we were going to go to 2 meetings so everybody could be here and hear all the same stuff, because some people felt they were being left out of the loop, which is fine. But now we're going to add another meeting, which means that will be another stipends for all of us members, which increases that outlay of money. And then also in my mind, and I might be wrong, I know Kat makes very few mistakes, but that's going to put another hours into typing up minutes and doing other things for that committee. And I just wonder, you know, we keep shuffling these numbers and we come up with these good reasons, as we always say they are, but then here we are fine-tuning or adding more to it. And I don't know, I mean, I don't like that we go long sometimes because people like myself and Rosales speak for a long time, but I do know that, you know, something's wrong, and I sort of prefer, as everybody else puts their 2 cents in, I preferred the committee structure the way it was because we had more input, more time, we could digest those that had to do, here sometimes I truly get lost in the shuffle. We jump from ELEC to administrative and policy, and then we go to finance, and by the time I go home, I don't even want to look at my checkbook. So I don't know if I can support this at this time. I know the reasoning is people want to sit down and discuss ELEC more than that, but that's just more travel pay, more money, and you know, in my mind, if we got that to give to us, we ought to be looking at giving that to those who work for us.
Any other discussion on this, Mr. Richards?
I think from looking at this once that I like the proposal. I like the old committee structure best because I thought it created better deliberations, paced things out. But as I'm sure Madam Chair also believes, we pretty consistently go along at these meetings, which is fine. Everybody should have their say. But it worries me that usually the last committee, sometimes the last two committees, everybody is so tired from screaming and arguing that there's just no real discussion and oversight towards the end. And this seems to me something that even if everything stays as long as it was, that will give everything a more fair chance to be looked at, and hopefully we can make sure everything gets a good look.
Thank you. Ms. Bergson.
I have a feeling that...
Closer to the mic.
I have a feeling that hot air tends to fill the space and time available, so that if we have another meeting, people, it will still go long. People will simply still fill up the time with talk.
Three meetings or 4 hours, mine was gone back.
Any other? Mr. Alex.
I guess I'll weigh in. I mean, if I have to pick between
six,
2 3-hour meetings or 3 2-hour meetings, I take the 3 2-hour meetings. So I'm willing to try it. I'd be willing to support this and try it and see how it works out. I know that after, you know, 3 or 4 hours here, I'm not making as good decisions as I was at the beginning of the meeting. I can't imagine how it affects our elderly board members like Mr. McGinty here.
Mr. O'Connor.
I'll direct this. Thanks, Carol. I'll direct this at Chris. If you were listening, Astrid already pointed out what we're going to get is three meetings of 4 hours. It's not going to shorten anything up at all. It's just going to wear everybody out an extra night every month.
It does. Maybe we'll go back.
Well, I'll call on you in 1 second, Mr. Carter. Let me just illustrate that although we've had, some of you have had it a lot longer than myself, the six committee structure, of which, of course, I like the smaller committee structure. It makes sense. However, six meetings that I would have to attend if I really wanted to know what was going on, or wait till Mr. McGinty brings all of this wonderful stuff to the full board meeting and then ask him my thousand barrage of questions then. Or we can go to what we've done, which is go to the three-committee structure, which when the board passed to go to a three-committee structure, it was not to be written in stone, but with some caveat that we would review this to see really how it's working. And I agree that in some way we'll have a lot of hot air because we just are hot-aired people. However, if you reduce to two committees per meeting, there is no, absolutely no way that we will have the same result as we did last Tuesday or this Tuesday. We've moved from last Tuesday's meeting an entire agenda item of ELEC to this week. And then this week we said, we're not ready for that, move it to next week. Which is in essence what I'm asking for us to do, is to reduce these to two meetings so that ELEC and Justice, who could partner on this and balance the time a little bit, maybe we won't have as much of an ELEC meeting or a Justice meeting on one of these weeks, which could really happen, or we will have this same committee structure now, we'll increase facilities, which will be the next issue, and then we'll compact these two meetings into 10-hour sessions, of which, as you've suggested, by the time we get to finance tonight, most of us will be absolutely exhausted, and however good our intentions, we will let things go that we probably shouldn't. And so that is where my recommendation came from, to go from two to three instead of six. And I owe Mr. Carter and then you, Mr. Langenheim.
Yeah, I prefer the committee form of government because we had hands on what we were doing. And I don't know why now they used to, I think they used to try to poke us because Highway never did have a two-hour meeting. About a half an hour, 45 minutes, we always do our meeting. So it's in the individual. Put the hot talk and get out of the business, be honest with you. You can get out of here and stop the crap. That's what's wrong with it. And the procedures is wrong. That's what's wrong with it. All the committees I served on, we never was there over an hour. Sometimes we go 20 minutes.
Thank you. Mr. Langenheim.
There's an old statement, too many cooks spoil the broth. And the purpose of the committee meeting is to prepare a broth to present to the full board. We don't need all the cooks in the room for that. Those are on those smaller committees are self-selected cooks. If someone else, other members of the board, wish to come to those meetings, they can and do. But this is just essentially running two full board meetings for everything, and I think that is an excess.
Ms. Beckson?
Would Deb tell us how much more it would cost to have this extra 12 meetings a year?
Well, I didn't bring my calculator, but a meeting, if everyone attends, costs right about $1,300.
What about the reuse of the room and paying you up and all you people?
Well, we all work for you.
That's what he's supposed
Our
to do.
Salaries won't change. We'll still be here.
Mr. Rosales.
I did work out those figures, by the way. $45 per meeting times 12 months comes out to $540 for each member. $540 times 27 members comes out to $14,580, and that's not including staff time, and that's not including travel time. And if we reduce it to 22 members in 2012, times 540, it will be 11,880.
Thank you, Mr. Rosales. Let me just remind the board members that we are probably one of the lowest board paid committees.
Thank you.
Let me also remind you, I know that's not a popular position to take, but let me just also remind you that this board, when I came on the board, voted to not increase your own salary, which was whatever we needed to do at that time, that's what we did. But we have since increased the salaries of other boards that we appoint. We also have some boards that actually are paid more than us, and we actually administrate the county. So I want to make sure that we understand that we're not asking for overabundance of money here. We're talking about really being able to do the business more efficiently. So if people want to keep this current situation, which is the three committees, two meetings a month, and that's the consensus of the board, that's absolutely fine. This proposal is to make a recommendation to look at the changes and the effectiveness of what we're doing. If we're not looking to be effective, which is what the initial discussion about going from six to two meetings was about, and we are still not effective, then we do have a responsibility to make a recommendation to become effective. Mr. James.
Madam Chair, as I always say, that's fine, and you put that option out there, but I see no option saying, would we prefer to go back to the committees that we used to have? I see nothing in there that gives
this is my recommendation, but you can certainly make one.
But you're saying that, you know, we need to look at this or that, and I would ask that you consider that if we're going to look at this, you know, give us the option to stay as we are, or to increase it, as you say, to the three, or do we want to go back to the committees as they were? Because that was part of the negotiations also, that we would review it after a year to see how it was working, and if see how the numbers fall out. But in my mind, if I'm going to start coming to three meetings, even though we had the study thing set up, I'm really going to more meetings than I was before, and I agree with Ralph, and I agree with Lloyd. And I understand what you're saying. Everybody wants to hear it and the knowledge and all that, but we're losing it after so much time. But the committees I served on, whether it was Justice or Facilities,
we could ask more in-depth questions. We went out. I can't see all of us getting on a bus and going to tour the nursing home as a group. I just can't see it, and it hasn't worked because we've made that offer on a weekend and nobody shows up. But the way it was before, we had that opportunity. We could go see the buildings that we're maintaining. Right. We had the chance to sit in there, and we even have meetings in the courthouse. I don't think we can do that now as big as a group as we are and accommodate everybody. And I do firmly believe that if you have a strong interest, I look around in here just like right now. Look how many empty chairs there are. Look how many of us leave early sometimes. If you want to attend that meeting, just like the public, go to it. But let us do our job, and I trust, whether it be Mr. McGinty or Al Nudo or even Lloyd, if he tells me this is what we decided in committee, I'm going to ask questions, but for the most part, I'm going to trust that they've done their homework.
Thank you. Did I see your hand, Ms. Ellis? Okay. I'm sorry, Ms. Petrie first, and then I'll come back to you.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for bringing this up for conversation. That year I sat over there and watched the board. It's very clear that after about an hour and 45 minutes or 2 hours, the board members are really tired, and the decision-making curve is downward. And if you, Mr. Rosales, calculated the cost for any extra meetings, be they you go to one more committee of the whole or you're back to the committee structure, there's still cost to all of that. And I guess my counter thought to that is I've looked at some of the decisions made when the board has been tired, and they have been costly decisions in the sense of things that have come through. So maybe, in fact, it doesn't really cost more to the county to create the decision-making structure that much better decisions come out. And I'm willing to have this conversation further so that we get to that point. And I'm assuming as part of this conversation, no matter what the board decides, that there will be some adjustment to the board rules, because some of those board rules inhibit some of what other board members have just mentioned they would like to see happening in a more in-depth investigative conversations. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Mr. O'Connor. I'm sorry, Mr. Carter, and then Mr. O'Connor.
That is perfectly right. You have Democrat and Republican on those committees. He takes back to his office the same thing I do. So it's no. Don't tell me that you don't know. When you go to your office, what we do in highway, there's a man taking to it. And I do the same thing with mine. Fact of the matter, what is four or five Democrats is only committed, and the same on the other side. How are you going to miss information that way? It's ridiculous. Oh, don't try to jive me now. You tell me, but I ain't got to believe all that because I know it's wrong.
Mr. O'Connor?
I just wanted to say, I see one advantage to the large committee system. If the old committees got caught three people having lunch at the wrong place in daylight hours, we were in automatic trouble. And now we got a majority of a quorum that amounts to, we can get a table for eight at the Cracker Barrel and talk it over now.
I mean, that is absolutely true in relationship to the numbers. Mr. Kurtz, you're out of order, talking all the way across the room. Nobody on the public could understand that. Any other comment? Can we get some direction of which way? Do we want to go back to six? Remember, I was one of those people that did not want to go to the Committee of the Whole. I was one of those people. But I have seen great benefit personally to the Committee of the Whole, and I feel personally more informed. That's my personal opinion. But certainly we need to review where we currently are.
Ms. Michaels, this might throw another wrinkle into all this, but you know, I understand that when we have the separate committees, everybody has a different chair, but if we decide to go to three meetings or two meetings or whatever it is, I would like to see one chair for that meeting. because I think it's very difficult when we sit here and say somebody's responsible for this and somebody's responsible for that, and yet you really are acting as a group. So that's kind of difficult that somebody's responsible for something at a meeting where we've got three or four different things going on at the same time, different.
Mr. Curtis?
I have to disagree, Diane.
Okay.
They're not here now, but Patsy just told me today, she says to me, what, do you live here? I spend a lot of time with John Hall and with Susan Monty, and when I sit on that chair, I think the chair who heads up that committee has done a lot of work, perhaps more work than most of the other board members within that committee. And sitting up there, I can direct and lead into certain areas that might be questionable and answer questions that I have ascertained through the time. I think all chairs meet with. Now, if you feel comfortable that one person can handle it, that's fine, and I can answer the questions from here. But I don't see, if we're going to go to two committees to have just two people, one sits for the committee and then the next sits for their own committee, that just usually the chair has more information in his hand than most of the other board members.
Mr. James?
Following up on Mr. O'Connor's comment, and Deb, I hope you can answer this. Can we legally right now, if eight of us want to get together and talk?
Seven.
Okay. I didn't know that, but it's also confusing to me, and I've said this before, and what Diane said, we do, when we have the regular board meeting, Pius runs the whole show through the whole agenda. We, you know, take turns with different, I don't mind if there was like each different meeting, one chair, and just runs the program, whatever items are on there, but everybody wants to get up there, and yes, you're right. Maybe you spend a lot of time here, but that's a choice you make. Al spends a lot of time here, and he's not a chair of any committee. That goes back to what I said. If you really had an interest on what was going on at some committee level, you could go to that meeting. Personally, it isn't going to really upset me one way or the other. I was at the other committees. I'm at this committee. And if we go to five meetings, that's fine. The only thing I'd like to see is raise my pay to $100 a month.
Ms. Holderfield.
I hope this isn't out of order, but can we call the vote?
Well, there's no vote on it. This is just a discussion for us to get some direction of the feelings of the board.
That's
members.
How tired I am from all this already.
You're tired.
You guys are wearing me
out. That's the point.
Here's my personal opinion. I think that, as you said, I know there's a cost, and I don't want there to be a cost to this. I think that these meetings are going longer and longer and longer, but I also feel that during those meetings we've really accomplished a lot at those meetings, and they may go a long period of time, but we've gotten, as far as I see, a lot of accomplished, and I think we've built a lot of camaraderie amongst ourselves to do what's in the best interest of the county board. So I hate to see there be a third meeting added to an already busy meeting agenda that we all have. However, with that being said, if we do go to three meetings, then if we see that it's not working, then revert back to the two meetings. And sometimes I think you have to try something a little bit different to see if there could be a resolve to some of these meetings going on and on. So that's a big question is, do we stay till 10 o'clock at two meetings, or do we try and reduce the amount of hours that we're here, but yet we're really increasing the amount of hours that we're participating in meetings? So, you know, what the answer is, three meetings or speak less at the two meetings that we're at. And I don't know how you can really make a resolve unless you just continue to go in the course of action that you're currently in, or you throw one more meeting in there and hope that everybody doesn't continue to speak and speak and speak and speak.
Thank you. Unfortunately, all of us were elected by somebody to represent some issue. And when that issue comes up that is pertaining to you or your constituents, I would hope that you speak to that issue. And so I don't think that we should stop the discussion. We should try to figure out how to tailor it slightly. Mr. Nudo. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll skip Ms. Alex, and then I'll come to you, Mr. Newell. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry. I was just going to throw out one comment, and that was that we also have a study session, and one thing we may want to consider, that you may want to consider as you present this proposal, talk to some of the board members, is whether or not if we go to smaller CAL meetings and only have two committees, whether we want to combine the study session with the committee to which it was related, which would result in the same number of meetings, assuming we have a study session every month, rather than have a study session and then three CAL meetings. I don't have a strong preference one way or the other, but it's something you might want to think about if cost is an issue.
Thank you.
Now, my comment as well, that I was assuming that we would just substitute the study sessions, because now if we want to spend a little more time on ELOC will only have one other item on the agenda, and we can have Monty Hall. We can have Susan and John make their presentations during that. I'm in favor of three, because I really believe that we are achieving more information for everybody. I really don't want to go back to the small committees. And I think with 22 members, we're going to end up having what we want to achieve anyway with three meetings. To have more people informed, and it'll go shorter just by virtue of five less people.
The study sessions are not part of your county board rules. The study sessions were added to the calendar that you approved for this year. So
they are budgeted.
I just wanted to point out that the calendar that's being proposed here is different than the calendar with the study sessions, to make sure that all the business occurs before the county board meeting. But certainly, if you were going to do this, you could, without the 14-day rule, also adjust your calendar for the rest of the year, and we would just publish the updated calendar if you got rid of the study session.
Well, then let me just follow up and then just say that I think it's a good idea that Chris came up with, and that is to eliminate the study sessions. It's in the budget now, so it's a grand experiment for 1 year. We'll have three meetings anyway. We would have had three meetings anyway with the study sessions, and we can focus on ELOC when the issues are such that we need additional information, which would be everything.
Mr. Kurt, Ms. Patsy Petrie has the floor.
I appreciate the compromise, but I'm very concerned of folding a study session to what Madam Chair is trying to accomplish. The last study session we had was totally full of the information being given on land use issues, and that was over 2.5 hours, almost 3 hours. So to fold those together is quite... I think that defeats what we're trying to accomplish through this conversation. I will share one comment from a higher level staff member. I'm doing so with permission, but not identifying that individual. And that individual pointed out that the sharing of quality information and the chance to have really probing, robust conversations has been very much negated by the Committee of the Whole format as compared to the former format of committees. So I share that, especially for those who feel that that's a much better form for the county board to work under.
Thank you. And Ms. Carter.
Can anybody tell me how long that the 27 board members have been established to this county?
1972?
This is 1868? 1972.
Huh?
Yeah, it dropped
down from 50.
73?
72.
72. Well, what I want to get at, you used to walk out of either one of these cities with a flash. The boat is growing double, the county is getting bigger. Now, I'm just conservative when you come to money, and is anybody else when it makes sense? To me, if 27 members was crucial back in them days, now the county is growing, your city is growing, and you're going to cut. That's not logic to me. It don't make sense. So, if you're in the horse and buggy days and use the same system, now you're flying jets, and then you go It's just watching me. Now, that's my objection about the reducing the 27 members. You don't pay them anything. When we go to NACO, every other county send their people to seminars everywhere to learn new ideas to bring about. We don't. We don't have that opportunity. But yet still, we can't pay. There's something wrong, ladies and gentlemen. There's something ain't right with this deal. We couldn't eat. Carol and I wanted to join the Black Caucus for a fee, and we couldn't even get that. Now, look, we're going backwards and still forward. And you pay 27 members less than you do one administrator. 27 people that you have working for you. And I say half. Probably half. That's a big, that's putting it big right there. In money that you're paying your members to go all over the county to do your work for you and bring it back. And you're going to get rid of them? To me, that's what you call a person that loves his community and want to do something. Because it's not the money. If it's the money, I'd quit because I'm an electrician. I can make me $50, $60 an hour if I was going to look at it that way. But it's not the money.
Well, I think one of the things, Mr. Carter, that we are trying to do, even in discussing this, obviously, just for the board members to consider, whether I'm on the board or not, once you go to, if you go to the smaller board of 22, smaller committee structures are not going to be able to be evenly divided. So you'll have 22 members in 6 committees, and I don't know how you're going to appoint folks to those committees with that smaller number. And of course, the next board can come in and change it to whatever they want. At this rate, I would like to just ask permission of the county board. I would like for us to make a recommendation, and I asked at this point that you all support us coming back with another recommendation. We can certainly look at the 6 committee structure. If you want to go back to 6, we can put that recommendation back on the table and allow members to see what the impact and the cost would be to go back to the 6 committee structure and how that would work. Again, that's still 6 committees as opposed to 3, and the staff here still has to follow 6 committees as opposed to the 3 meetings. So no matter what we do, there is a cost factor for staff as well as for us, time, and so on and so forth. So at this point, I would ask that if the committee wants, if the committee of the whole wants, we can certainly produce the impact of going back to the 6 committee structure. What we cannot deny, though, is that the current structure is not the most effective. As it was sold when we decided to go to this, it's not the most effective process for us at this point. So that's what I'd like to get some support on, and perhaps we can bring this back on our next policy agenda. I'll go there and then there.
Is it possible that some of these committees could be dissolved or added into another, so we have that 6 down to 4 or 5 or whatever it is? I don't know. Just a thought, because you were talking about dividing them up. There was such a recommendation 2 years ago. It failed. I guess I would say that, you know, for a rules change, rules changes are proposed by board members. So this is a rules change proposal that will be on the April 12th Committee of the Whole agenda under policy. If any other board member wants to propose any other rules change on this issue, if you need assistance with it, I'm happy to provide you with that assistance. If you want to present a different scenario or a different way of doing it. Just be aware that it has to be in all board members' hands at least 14 days before April 12th for it to be able to be considered at the next meeting.
Ms. Collard, and then we'll close ours out.
Okay, I was going to say that I support going back to the 6th committee, but if by any chance I still could support your proposal if the committee don't want to go back to the 6th committee.
Thank you. We'll have this on the April Committee of the Whole for policy, and we really, really want to see recommendations and other solutions to this issue from board members prior to that point, 14 days before that meeting to take place. Ms. Petrie?
To follow through your question, would it be possible to provide for that April policy meeting a matrix comparison between going to three committee of the wholes and the six committees in relationship to the necessary rule changes, what is the cost factor, and a roughed out schedule of when the meetings might be, sure. So we could look at that. And I would encourage us to consider not folding in a study session into this new format of three committees of the whole, but I'm open to all kinds of discussions on resolving this situation. And thank you again for bringing it up.
Thank you.
One more thing. Patty said schedule when the meeting is going to be held. Each committee decided what time.
So I will follow Ms. Lucy, and we can work on the cost factors of going back to the six at this point. It'll be on for April, and if there are other recommendations, we'd like to have them prior to the committee of the whole for April. That's all from policy. We need to do designation. So items for consent from policy will be, of course, all of our appointments passed, and then the vendor contract with Pepsi. There's nothing further from policy. Thank you.
Item number one from finance is a budget amendment 1100016 for $6,500 to appropriate funds already reserved for coroner's capital needs to fully fund the actual cost of replacement of a vehicle in fiscal 2011. Is there a motion for approval by Al, seconded by Geraldo? Any discussion on it? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries. Next up, State's Attorney. It's a request for approval of an application for and, if awarded, acceptance of violent crime victims assistance grant. Is there a motion for approval by Ralph? Is there a second by Stan? Any discussion on it? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries. You know, Dan, I tried to get Dan to leave early. He said he didn't have much, and he has stuck it out. Dan, do you have anything for us? I don't understand why he would. Do you have anything for us? Just to stretch his legs a little
bit. But I just want to let you know we didn't have to borrow again so far till now. That's always a good thing. And I wanted to thank Patty. Patsy, I'm sorry, where'd Patsy go? Well, she took the time to come today and spoke to me for about an hour, and I sure enjoyed that. Not sure I see all the rest of you 26 people come see me sometime. Sure be glad to answer your questions if you'd like me to answer anything for it or explain what we do or how we do it or the kind of money we wish to have or the money we hopefully have in the future or anything like that. So I just ask that my report be accepted and placed on file, please.
By Al, seconded by Geraldo. By staying here this entire time, Dan has proven that he's a glutton. Then he invited all of us individually to come and see him, so that's proof positive.
Not a one time, unfortunately.
So, all in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed to that motion carries. Thanks very much for staying, Dan. The auditor is not here. Is there a motion to accept the monthly report and place it on file? Please, by Ralph, is there a second? I'm sorry, I didn't hear if there was a second. By Astrid. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Next up is Deb.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, the purchase and not filing policy, did we get that or not?
No.
Nope. We did not get that.
Sorry, that's why I didn't say anything about it.
I assumed that. Will that be available online? Or?
I assume it will be available at the full board meeting.
He'll provide it at the board meeting.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Next up is Deb.
The handout tonight with the reports, just very briefly, that's still early. General corporate fund, though, continues to do well. The sales taxes and income tax are coming in at a stable rate. So the outlook looks good. Also, general government, which is where our fees revenue is, which was severely over budgeted last year, and it was a concern to us, looks like it's doing fine this year, and that is another major revenue source for general corporate. So all things considered, looks at this point like we would end the year above budget by 2% or about $708,000. It's early, though. This report gains much greater credibility about May or June. Similarly, with expenditures, right now it looks like we're underspending in just about every area except purchase document stamps, which correlates to an increased revenue on the first page, to the tune where we would underspend by about $760,000 of the actual budget, which would be very similar to landing where we landed with the fiscal year 2010 actual expenditures. Again, I would expect the expenditure projection will probably increase. But right now, with those two projections, we would be looking at ending this fiscal year at our fund balance goal, even with the nursing home loan that is still outstanding, remaining outstanding. So that's positive. The good thing is, even if it doesn't end up this good, we are definitely, even if we actually spent the entire budget expenditure and received only what's budgeted for revenue, we still end up maintaining the fund balance that we currently have at between 8.25% and 9.35%, depending on whether you consider the loan or not, which is still substantially better than where we were a year ago and 2 years ago. The budget change report has not changed since last month. We did not make any amendments to the general corporate budget in the last month. And then the Harris & Harris reports are actually looking quite good. On page 5 of this handout, you'll see that year-to-date, general corporate has received $46,617 from these collections. And on page 7, total for Champaign County, $250,000 has been collected in these first 3 months. So that has definitely picked up and improved and looks like it should be moving forward with at a fairly stable rate throughout the rest of this fiscal year.
Stan, do you have a question?
Yeah, on this collection, this is just mainly off of the old accounts that were outstanding, correct?
This is the court system, yeah. And these are there's $20 million owed to us in back fines, fees that have been ordered, and that's what they're working on collecting.
And Carol?
I just wanted to ask, when we do get this collection of these fees, and at this point it looks like we got them, does that just simply go to general court? The revenue that comes from them go to the general corporate?
No, not all of it. As you see the report, there are more reports. Page 5 is what goes into general corporate from what is being collected. But these fees get distributed to various agencies, police departments who issue traffic tickets. So they've collected a total of $250,000 in 3 months on Champaign County cases. 46,000 of it went into the general corporate fund. The balance is going to other agencies and or into other funds in county government.
I can have one.
Please.
So when we do get this Santa Claus fee that comes in, this money is unbudgeted, correct?
No, it's considered part of the revenue. It is projected in revenue. It was over-projected last year. I think the projection is more correct this year, but we expect that it's going to take them at least 3 years to collect all of these uncollected fees, so it was considered to be something to be built into the operating budget for revenue and offsetting expenditure.
Brian?
This is a net amount here after their fees. This $46,000.
That's how much has been deposited into general corporate.
And then
right,
my next question is that with our money coming from the state, how close are they to coming back up to par? Are we 1-2 months behind on getting money from them?
Well,
I know that's a big part of the budget.
Income tax, unbelievably, at this point, normally we would have received 2 months of revenue from income tax. We've received 4 months, so clearly the state is starting to catch up on the income tax. All the other revenue from the state is coming in as it should, but the sales taxes, again, are showing improvement. We've received sales taxes for what would have been sales last October, which were up over 8%, and last November, which were up 3.5%. We've not yet received December. That's what we'll receive this month.
Chris?
Deborah Brennan, my apologies if you've already covered this at a previous meeting, but this Harrison Harris, I assume, is a collection agency. Is this a new relationship with the county?
It's about a year and a half.
Okay, so when you say it's maybe 3 years, we
but it was very slow getting started. There were many issues. I would say we could almost consider that fiscal 2011 is really the first full year, because they really didn't get started until about April last year, and then the circuit clerk quit sending files in August because there were some problems with how the files were being interpreted. So it's all fully operating right now.
Follow-up, did we use a different collection agency before, or is this a new...
This is the first time we've ever done this, and this firm was engaged by the state's attorney. It is a law firm that specializes in performing this service for numerous municipalities and local governments, and it was the state's attorney's decision and contract to hire them.
And is that a competitive contract? And if so, do you know how long we have them for?
The state's attorney made the selection. She did not go through an RFP process.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Alan, then Stan.
As I recall, we don't pay fees, do we? It's the end.
No, we don't pay fees.
The
users,
person who pays the fine
people.
Pays the fees as well. Right. So we have no out of pocket.
That's right.
Stan,
didn't at one time the court hire a gentleman that was collecting back fees and that for salary?
There is a paralegal in the state's attorney's office, which when that position was originally created, was to work on this issue, and that paralegal has assumed other responsibilities as well, but still works on collections, on current collections. So what we're sending to Harrison Harris is typically 60 to 90 days old or older. He's working to try and make sure, so there's some hope that at some point in the future, if we get really caught up, that we're able to maintain, you know, without having these services.
And one last thing, if we could, like at the end of this year, when you give us the breakdown, could you, you know, give us a number of what was owed and what was collected last year and then what's collected this year, so we can sort of have a running total for some of us that are here and put it all together, like we did on the nursing home when you did
to see what's
course.
Been collected. Yeah.
Well, versus what was outstanding, and then what you, like you said, last year it started in April. Mm-hmm. But I know if you got to do it by the budget year, that's fine. But what you do, but just give us a breakdown on what's being collected. So, like 5 years from now, if we're still engaged with these folks, we can see where it was at and where we're going.
Yes.
So with that, could I entertain a motion to accept these three files and place on these reports and place on file? It's motion by Stephanie, seconded by Stan. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries. Next.
The next item is something you dealt with at policy a little while ago, and this is for a recommendation for the Finance Committee to approve the creation and classification for the new position of Deputy Director for EMA.
Is there a motion for approval by Chris? Is there a second? By Jan, a discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries. And item five.
Item five is was sent back to committee, as I understand it, from the February 24th County Board meeting. And there is a revised version of this resolution establishing the fiscal 2011 salary increase for non-bargaining employees. At your desk, says revised.
So moved.
That motion by Ralph for approval. Is there a second?
Second.
By Astrid. Discussion? Chris?
Mr. Quisenberry asked me to ask a question of the county administrator. This is a, given that we're proposing that the 2.5% be temporary, what is the impact of that with respect to the starting point for salaries, for salary planning for next year?
Hopefully, the salary planning for next year would make permanent this 2.5% increase by adding it to the base for these employee salaries at that point in time. That recommendation will come to you in May for salary administration. The goal would be that 2.5% would be the minimum that you would give, because really these employees would then be making the same for 2 years in a row.
Your feeling is that by May we'll have a better enough idea of the financial condition that we'll know the likelihood of this being able to be made permanent?
Typically, it is the goal that you decide salary administration for non-bargaining in May. The last couple years have been somewhat of an anomaly, but hopefully that we'll be able to do that this year.
Okay, thank you. I'll pass that on.
Anything else? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries. Is there any other business of finance? Bias.
I just want to point out that the next county board meeting, we have our photograph taken at 6:30, half hour before the meeting, so dress up and show up.
There is no chair's report. All of the action items go on to consent, which is A1, B1, E4, and 5. Closed session minutes. Is there an approval for closed session minutes of February 15th, which have been around by Stephanie, second by Carol, in discussion on the closed session minutes? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Semi-annual review of the closed session. Pius.
I move to keep them closed.
That motion by Pius to keep them closed. Seconded by Chris. Any discussion on that? Pius.
As of the last meeting, Mr. Lufan and I are looking at ways to release some of these. Again, we have to review this by law, so this is what we have to vote on tonight.
Carol?
I'm going to vote no tonight on this closed session because I think we've been talking about this for a very long time, to put some parameters on how long minutes and the business of the county remain closed. Some of them have been closed since I was a little girl, the 80s. I mean, I think we need to put some parameters on that, and some things need to become available to the public at some point, and this board needs to deal with that issue, so I'm not going to support this at this point.
Anything else, Pius?
I'll just act in code.
Anything else? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. I think that we're adjourned. Thank you. Oh.